You good?
Okay. We're going to call the Firefighter Advisory Committee meeting to order on June 20th, 2024. Is that the right date? Okay.
Do you know where you're at?
No, I have to look at my calendar to find that out. So before we get started, it's been a long time since this committee has met. We've had a couple of things that are a little unique to the process, so we've been out of the meeting process for a while. So this is the first time we're in the new facilities up here at 4800 North Lamar. They look great. I think there's been two commission meetings here already since this place was occupied, and I'm hoping staff is getting comfortable in here, and welcome to all the guests that are here. This is being streamed live, so if you make sure to silence your phones, if you would, for the respect of everybody that would be listening, we would appreciate it. And then before we get started, because it's been such a long period of time, I know across the fire service in the state of Texas, the brothers and sisters in the fire service have struggled at times, so I know there's been a couple of deaths. I know there's been a lot of cardiovascular and cancer and even mental health and resiliency concerns and issues. So for anybody that's a firefighter or in our world, we'd like to just take a minute to just think of them and their families and either offer them up in prayer or at least our thoughts and our moral support. So if you don't mind just taking a moment of silence, I appreciate it. Okay, thank you. So Mr. Secretary, I'll turn it over to you.
Start off with a roll call. All right, Ben Sabrigo.
Present.
Daniel Anderson.
Present.
Daniel Buford.
Present.
Daniel DeYeer.
Present.
Antonio Ramos.
Present.
And Jim Reedy is?
Jim Reedy's excused. I believe he's at the NFPA conference.
And Keith Schmidt, present.
You are here.
Yes, sir. Ready to move on to item number two? Item number two, adoption of the September 21, 2023 Firefighter Advisory Committee meeting minutes.
Okay, so that's been quite some time since we've had that meeting, so a lot of months have passed, so I don't know if anybody's recalled. I've gone to the website to look at the minutes that were there, but I also went back and played the audio recording, and I didn't see anything personally on there. Does anybody see anything else that needs to be addressed or revised or edited? Okay, that being said, I'll entertain a motion.
Make a motion.
Second it.
Okay, so
motion to adopt the minutes from the September 21st.
Okay, Daniel Buford made the motion, Antonio Ramos seconded it. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? So moved.
Item number three, election of committee officers.
Okay, this has been put on us as a requirement for a number of years now, usually at our first meeting each year. So it's usually occurred much earlier than June, but this year we're here in June. So we've got all three positions that are up for appointment, which is the chair, the vice chair, and the secretary. So I think we should take those individually as we go through here. So we'll start with the chair. Does anybody have a motion or a name to throw out there?
I'd like to make a motion that we continue you as the chair of our committee. I think you've done a great job, so, and you would continue to do a great job. So.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. So I have a motion for Daniel Buford.
I would second that motion.
I take Keith Smith's second. Any other nominations? Any discussion? Well, thank you for the comment. I'm trying my best, so I'm not here serving anybody but y'all, and we're all serving the commission in the state of Texas, so it's been an honor to work with you guys, so you make that very easy to serve you, so I appreciate it. So that being said, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so moved. So the next position then would be the vice chair. I'll entertain any motions.
Mr. President, I make a motion to elect Daniel Buford for the position of vice chair.
Okay, you got Vince Abrigo recommending and nominating Daniel Buford. I'll be glad to second that. I don't have a problem with that at all as well. I know Daniel has served in that position for years, and I think that's great for the cohesiveness of the group. Any discussions? Any other? That being said, I'll entertain the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Everybody opposed? Okay, this is getting easy.
Okay. And Cliff, are we on pace doing this right?
Yep.
Okay. I guess I should be asking the attorney questions, the legal questions.
Yeah,
I shouldn't be asking the legal questions.
But if I say yes, I'm going to go on. If he says yes, then there has to be a little bit of weight to it. So.
You are adhering to the rules of Robert's Rules of Order, so it may carry on.
Okay, great. So the last position is the secretary, and I know Keith has served us well in that position for quite some time. But he is finally retiring from our committee, so this is his last meeting for those of you in the audience. So we're very appreciative to that. So I guess we will not be nominating you, so I'll entertain any questions. If we nominate you, that really says something, right? I think we all would, but we appreciate what you've done. So I will entertain a motion for the secretary.
Mr. President, I want to nominate Antonio Ramos.
Okay.
For the position of secretary, sir.
Okay. Vince has nominated Antonio.
I'd like to second that, if I could.
Okay. I've got Keith seconding it. Any discussion? Any comments? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? So moved. Okay. That was pretty short, sweet, and easy.
Easy done. Item number four, discussion and possible action on the injury report.
Okay.
Good morning. My name is Grace Wilson. I'm the Public Information Officer at the Commission on Fire Protection. And one of my responsibilities is to be the administrator of the injury reporting program, so I'm the one who puts the report together each year. The commission, they discussed and reviewed the injury report at their last meeting last month, and so then they passed it on to you guys, hoping that you could today give them some recommendations that they can use to then put in the report as their official recommendations for the fire service based on the information and the data that's in the report today. I don't know if any of you got to listen to the meeting recording or if you were at the commission meeting last month, but I'll just go ahead and paraphrase what Mike said at the beginning. He just wanted to let everybody know that this is the first draft of the injury report, and the data continues to come in, and new numbers will be in the final draft of the report that the commissioners will be reviewing and approving at their August meeting. So the numbers will change. We don't expect a lot of significant changes, but again, this is just the first draft. And then there were a couple of things that he wanted to note about the executive summary. So let me go to that page because...
Is that page 10?
Let's see.
It is.
I think so, yeah. Okay. So we have that that box at the top of the page. That's going to change quite significantly in the next iteration of the injury report because you'll see that it says there are 808 number of departments in our database currently being regulated by the TCFP. So what he discussed with the commission was that we actually have over 1,700 entities in our FIDO system. Around 825 are fire departments, 475 are training facilities.
How many fire departments, Grace?
At that time, there were about 825.
Sorry, 825, okay.
Yeah, and 475 are training facilities. And so some training facilities are duplicates because, like, a fire department can also be a training facility. But in our world, that counts as two inspections. So I guess we kind of count it as two departments. And Cliff can correct me if I'm getting this wrong, but yeah. So ultimately, when you break it down, there's around 1,300 regulated entities in our system, if that makes sense. So we're going to be changing up this little blue box, and it's going to be a lot more descriptive with all those different numbers and things like that, just so y'all know. There are, in our system, you know, I initially said we have over 1,700 entities in our system. And so just to be clear about that, there are around 953 entities that are no longer regulated or no longer active. Like, for example, a volunteer fire department that maybe thought they wanted to be regulated, and then they got an inspection, and they're like, no, we don't want to do that anymore. You know, stuff like that. Or they just went inactive for whatever reason. But those are always going to be in our system. So that's where the discrepancy in those numbers comes from. I hope that makes sense.
For me, it does. And correct me if I'm wrong. There's several hundred entities, probably 300 entities, that there's three or less people that are actually in that entity. Some of those entities just have one individual.
Correct. Most of them are like fire marshal's offices and stuff like that. And if they want to be voluntarily regulated, then we bring them in. And when we did back in, I don't know what year it was, but we made the change over to the current FIDO system in 2017, certification manager had her employees go in and put in input every fire department, every fire marshal's office, and they attempted to put every law enforcement agency in our system. So we've got a bunch of stuff in there that we wouldn't regulate to begin with, and then there's a lot of stuff that was input in there that maybe we need to go back and look and take out to give us better numbers, because we've got to do a lot of digging around to do it. And at Grace's point, a fire department could actually have three separate things. You have the fire department, then if they have an on-site or a face-to-face training facility, that's two. And then they also may have a designation of an online training facility. So that's another entity.
Couldn't the fire marshal's office also be separate, possibly?
Correct.
It could even be four.
So we have a lot of departments that like that. The fire marshal's office is part of the fire department, but they're a completely separate division. So yeah. So we've got to do a lot of digging. So the numbers will change.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Grace.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to bring y'all up to speed with what Mike had described to the commission at their last meeting. So that was that. So just to remind you that the goal today is to come up with recommendations. Okay. Just for anyone who's kind of new to this who might be listening, I wanted to mention that the only time a fire department is required to report injuries to us is when they're also reported to workers' compensation. So a lot of times we are getting injuries reported to us that technically are voluntary because they didn't have to report them to workers' compensation. And we like that. We want to get all the injury data that we can. So anytime anybody can report injuries to us, please do. But just so everybody's clear, the only time you're required to report is when you're also reporting an injury to workers' compensation. And one other thing I wanted to mention for anybody listening is that we actually have a newish feature in FIDO where each department can download their own department's injury data for whatever time period you want to select. You just select a beginning date and an end date. And then all of your injury data from that time period will be put together in kind of a data dump. And you could compare that to the Texas-wide injury report if you ever wanted to, just so people know about that. And you can get in touch with me, just send us an email and ask for how to do that, and I'd be happy to send you instructions, send us an email. It's easy to do once you've done it the first time. But I just wanted to mention that because I don't know if a lot of people know about it, that they have that functionality that can get their own injury data for their own department. And then beyond that, I'm ready to start talking about the injury report, if you guys are. Do you all want me to go through some of the points, or did you have questions? You've already reviewed it. What do you all think?
Well, I can say, Grace, that first of all, awesome job. Every year y'all come back with something so much better than the year before, and it gives like you working for a fire department, being involved in a fire department that taking on health and safety is a major thing. It gives us so many tools to go back and talk to our members about, to talk to our local government about, even changing our own policies to keep our men and women safe. And so I do appreciate all the work and effort, and then the commissioners taking the smallest suggestions that we make and putting them forward. For instance, for me, the cancer thing is a huge deal. And I remember when we were putting, when we were asking people to put this together, and we were reporting 4 or 5 cancer cases in the state of Texas, which was completely just bad information. So if I'm a fire chief looking at trying to go and push some safety features in our fire department to our local government about why it's important for cancer screenings, if I go back and say there's only 6 firefighters in the state of Texas that's come down with cancer last year, they're going to say, okay, well, we're going to roll the dice next year. And so now we're starting to see this information coming out, and it's because of the education side of things, too, going around the state of Texas and putting this stuff out. For me, I'd like to see us to try to tackle the resiliency stuff with mental health, and I think it has to start exactly like we did with cancer, putting it out there of the stigma of reporting these things. If people are reporting lost time because of a firefighter with post-traumatic stress after a bad call is getting sent home and they're making these reports, we've got to push that agenda out there that that's something that needs to be documented as well. So we have these canned items that we can go back with toolkits like y'all have been doing with the state on the health and safety minutes, on some of the things that we're seeing as a major lost time. And then hopefully to break down the stigma of, hey, it's okay to have a reaction when we see bad things, and let's get our members that the support that they need before it goes to the next step, which is ultimately the bad thing, which is suicide in the state of Texas. So once again, just great job, and we really do appreciate that. As a firefighter in the state of Texas, I appreciate y'all's work on putting this together and the education side of things, of sending this stuff out there. Thank y'all.
Thank you. Okay, well, if you want to turn the page and go to page 11.
Hey, Grace, can I interject something here?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Sheridan? Yes, sir. I just want to let you guys know I'm not gonna delve off in it because it hasn't been talked about yet. But there is work in the background right now, ongoing, concerning mental health and some other stuff that goes on. So you will see some stuff roll out. So we are currently working on that. It's in its very, very infant stage. So I just want you guys to understand.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
And Grace, if you don't mind, I wrote a question down. I probably should have stopped just a second ago and asked this question. So we are required, fire departments are required to report to the commission any injuries that they submit to Texas workers' compensation. Who regulates that? Who makes sure that there wasn't omissions or oversight that just didn't occur?
I mean, I know that in a compliance inspection, that's one of the items that they touch on, is just to at least check in with injury reporting with the departments, what actually goes on during that inspection. I couldn't say for sure. But yeah, that's a good question. To my knowledge, no one.
So Cliff, maybe we could. So if you went to a fire department that reported 61 injuries to workers' comp, is somebody looking to see that 61 reports were received by the commission, or are we in the weeds like that?
We're not in the weeds like that. There's no oversight into it. It's a voluntary thing. Legislative, we're mandated to get that information, but it's up to the department to voluntarily give that information to us. We can't go into them and give them any monetary fines or impose any kind of penalties on them if they don't report it.
Okay. On page, or it's actually printed page 33, but it's got that box and it says a reminder for fire departments, any injuries to fire protection personnel that are reported to the Texas Workers' Compensation Commission must be reported to the Texas Commission of Fire Protection. So that must really doesn't carry any, it's still a, if you feel like it, or if you remember.
Correct. It's semantics. What a lot of departments do, like bigger departments like Houston and AFD, all the guys in the Metroplex area, it's not you or I or a firefighter with direct knowledge of the injury sitting down and doing these reports. They fill out the report that they're required to by the SOP of the department, and then that gets submitted to their admin assistant. Their admin assistant then sits there, and the stuff piles up, and when they get to it, she'll input it into the system. She may or may not know if it went to workman's comp. That might not be identified. That may just be a preliminary report that it happened on scene, and somebody, they did something. But they don't know firsthand if they went to the workman's comp level. I wish we had better enforcement on that, but right now it's all purely voluntary.
So with the tremendous amount of work this commission's done over the last 5 years, and how much more professional, much more efficient, and how much better the fire service in the state of Texas has become, that's actually like something I wish we could still focus somewhere in a recommendation, perhaps, that we try to get as accurate as possible. Because just what if? I mean, what I'm always afraid of is, what if there is just some omissions, nothing deceitful, but just through a simple lack of nobody connecting the dots or nobody within an organization being responsible, what if there was data that would show something significant for us? I'm always afraid that we're missing something. And I don't know about the rest of y'all, but I mean, if there were 103 burn injuries to fingers last year in the fire service, I'd like to know about all 103 of them. I don't really want to know about 60 of them, because the other 43 might paint a very different picture of something that we could address or, you know, try to benefit the fire department with.
And one of the backlog problems is there's not a definitive timeline tied to the submission of an injury report. So somebody may get burned or injured today. We might not see the injury report a month, 2 months down the line. We had some submitted here last month, and Rick can correct me if I'm wrong, it happened in 2023. So there's that delay process. And as myself and Chief Wisco and Chief Wallace get out and do these regional meetings, that is one of the big subjects that we talk about is injury reporting. And if you guys have attended any of them, you know Chief Wisco gets on his soapbox about injury reporting because he wants these numbers. That's how we get stuff done over at the Capitol and stuff like that. Because as you guys know, as a commission, we can't go and lobby these people and tell these people that that's what's happening. But with these numbers, we can back stuff up, and that's what it is. So we very much encourage people to report injuries.
Well, my bigger concern, too, is it's like if you break a bone or you get cut and have sutures or you burn yourself, that's kind of a definitive injury. But we're really focusing in today's world on cancers and mental health, which isn't as definitive.
Correct.
So that's what my fear is. Yeah. Is we already know, like on mental health, we know the biggest battle we have. And those of you sitting in the audience here from fire departments know the biggest obstacle we're trying to overcome is just the individual coming forward, just even seeking help. Mm-hmm. So we already know that there are things that are obscure that are a significant deterrent to our industry right now.
Yeah,
so when they finally come through, come forward, and somebody says, our department is now struggling with this, I hate to think that the report never made it to this level, because it could actually be impactful in our decision making.
Yeah, and the bad thing about cancer, other than the disease process in itself, is not fun at all. As you guys well know, a lot of these guys nowadays don't get diagnosed until after they've left the department. Mm-hmm. So they're not calling back to the department and say, hey, I've been diagnosed with cancer, can you input this, or do we need to do something with this? They would just go on with it about what they're doing and do it. When I left the department, I can tell you right now, I'm a prime example, I got diagnosed with skin cancer. I did not put in there's no injury report about me being diagnosed with skin cancer anywhere in our system.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that leeway there. We do, like I said, we do at these regional meetings encourage these people to report anything. And if anything comes out of this, we're here to educate and help. We're not here to enforce. We're here to educate and help people get to where the Texas Fire Service needs to be. I mean, getting these kids hurt, the old days of running in a building with your trunk on your SCBA shoved down in your coat and the air pack not on, and you know, that stuff are are gone. There's way too much dangerous stuff out there. So that's the big concern for us, and that's the reason we preach so hard about reporting injury.
Well, I know some of our significant agencies, like the Texas State Association of Firefighters, or even the Fire Chiefs Association, you know, they want to make decisions that are impactful to the health and well-being of the firefighters, and the best way we can do that, if we're lobbying for NFPA standards or additional counseling, or I mean, you know, some of you have heard me speak, you know, the 2448 or the 4896, I've never heard anybody discuss the psychological impact of that of the firefighters, right? I mean, that's I don't understand why firefighters don't work a 40-hour work week. The rest of the world does. We all do. I don't know why they don't. So, and then what mental health and physical health impacts is that? And I think I know we're moving in the right direction. This agency clearly has, for sure. But I just wish there was a better clearinghouse of holding people responsible for that. Like you say, if you leave the fire service and develop cancer, you know, we know what kind of a battle that is to ever get that considered to be an occupational cancer. It's a battle. But if it goes unreported, we know the situation is even worse than we think it is. And I personally have firefighters who were battling occupational cancer. You know, if they stayed on the job, they would have gotten a line of duty death. Instead, they took benefits for their family, so they retired. Well, now they were a retiree. Now it's not a line of duty death. Well, I think that's semantics. They still died from the occupational cancer.
It is. And I can say one positive thing that has come out of the injury reporting and people voluntarily staying stuff. I guess we can basically look at COVID. We had people submit all those COVID results and those injury reports and exposures and stuff like that. That stuff made it directly to the legislators back then, and now it's a presumptive. You got some stuff that's presumptive coming out of the legislature. I can't say directly due to this report, but I bet it had a lot of weight on it when it did.
Well, and that's where my frustration is. So a word like COVID that we never even heard of 5 years ago has already been accepted into the industry, but here we are still struggling with cancer and mental health. And we've known way before 5 years ago that was a problem in our industry.
Correct. But the firefighter mentality, we're Superman, nothing affects us. If it does, we don't talk about it.
Right,
but that's changing. That's two of the norms that we want to change.
Yeah, and I correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't mean to be the one doing all the talking. But any firefighter that's hesitant to come forward and say I need help or I'm struggling, if they were aware that 1,000 other firefighters have already done that, or 8,000 firefighters have already done that, compared to 3 firefighters that have done that, mm-hmm. I think the more that we make this impactful, that hey, first of all, the mental health issue, everybody in the fire service knows. I'll say this. I don't think anybody does this career for 10 years and isn't in that category.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm just going to say that. Just throw that out there. Now, where you are in that category is a different story. But, you know, we are making strides. We know we are. But we don't want to get, like you know, Daniel Buford mentioned again a minute ago, about to the end line where something absolutely horrible and catastrophic occurs. Can we do something to prevent that?
Yeah. And if the cards play out right, during the next commission meeting, there is going to be some stuff laid out about mental health and stuff like that. I'm not going to get into the bell off because it's very, very infant and stuff like that. And the person who has the idea about what needs to take place and stuff like that is going to go come talk to the commissioners and stuff like that.
Well, that's helpful. I think one of our comments and suggestions should be along the lines then to piggyback if that does happen, that we think it's important that the mental health issue be tracked as accurately as possible.
Yes.
Have you seen a lot of success with the cancer class that's being offered for us to do the...
The TEEX one or the firefighter, the cancer support network?
The cancer support network.
Both of them are very good.
Really good.
I mean, they're both the same exact course. Exactly. TEEX teaches the cancer support network course, but I think it's very good information and stuff like that. So I have some ideas about going forward, but that's for a different discussion.
Yeah, definitely don't want to push you too hard on that. And that was one of the things that we pushed for a while was having some type of class, because a lot of times as a new firefighter coming on, you're taught check your air pack, you're taught check your rig, you're taught about all these different things, and you don't know what the true responsibility and the roles of your actual fire department should be on who holds them accountable. And so that class kind of gives you some ideas of what is the expectation for that. Hopefully with what's coming down the pipe is something similar to that health and safety side of those accountability for the mental aspect and the resiliency programs that are putting out there. Because speaking just for my own, just diving in and trying to change the culture is hard enough as it is. But having those tools and equipment for you to have that backfill that to, along with you, with having agency support, being able to go out there and say, hey, there are components to this program where you can get help. And here's the expectations when it comes to cancer. Now here's the expectation when it comes to mental health awareness. And having that ability just to even circle back around with NFPA rules and, you know, having be able to say, hey, this is the wellness programs that we're having out there. And then, you know, even EAP programs in your local, you know, departments. Mm-hmm. I think that's key for moving forward with, like, the health and safety with the aspect of mental health and the resiliency programs of putting that together. And I know y'all working on it, so I'm not going to build you on it. But
no,
I think that over the years of talking about the same thing, we're making some great strides in the cancer. And that class alone, if that just changes a dozen firefighters every year that are new to the job coming on and knowing why it's so important, why we check our gear, why we should be washing our gear, why we should take ownership of our equipment. That's huge, because that's what's going to change. Those are the future fire chiefs. That's the future officers coming on. And it's no more suck it up, buttercup, sit in the back corner, don't say nothing. Now we're giving the fuel to those guys to kind of start their career off in the right way. So,
well, I'm going to make one more statement, then Grace can take it. Sorry, Grace. I will tell you that we've had a very good response or turnout in applications for the Health and Wellness Committee. We got some very passionate and some very, very strong-willed people that have applied to the Health and Wellness Committee. So it'll be interesting to go through the process to see who the commissioners pick and go from there. So.
Great.
Sorry, Greg.
I'm sorry. I got one more quick question.
Yes,
Grace, awesome job, like always. On the mental wellness, I'm glad to hear that we are making very good progress on the mental health part of what we do. And I'm glad to see here the commission is working on some program for that. Is that program, is it going to include a change to the reporting system to where now we can capture those numbers in a way that, I don't know how you would capture.
Let me stop you right there. I'm going to say yes to your full statement, but I can't give any specifics.
Okay.
Because there's nothing,
okay,
there's nothing background work for that, yes, but that's in the infant stage too. But yes, that is the ultimate point where we want to get mental health suicides into the injury reporting so that can be recorded also.
Good, because I know we allow numbers and statistics to help us push these programs, and I just, you know, at some point we're going to need to capture that to push those programs.
Correct.
So I'm glad to hear that. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Are we able to self-report an issue as a firefighter if I have something come up and maybe it's submitted to my department but my department fails to report something? Is there off of FIDO, is there ability for us to self-report anything?
Not as an individual. It's all got to be through the department.
I guess if an individual maybe had a cancer diagnosis or a postmortem suicide issue, and the department doesn't want to report that, can that individual write a letter to send it to the commission to have it added to that? I mean, I think that if we notice things, but we're finding stalemates or stuff that's stopping that we're kind of that reporting. Is there no way to add that to maybe a section for a self-report, or is that even possible for our system to allow that?
That would be between Grace and IT, and it would still have to go through the process of all the steps and everything to add it to it.
Because, I mean, even that, to capture what Chief DeYeer was talking about with our retirees, mm-hmm. You have a guy who's 40 years on the job and retires and then gets cancer. If that option's available, even if we capture 10% of individuals that leave the fire service that have had long careers in there, have that ability to contact FIDO or log in or send something to the state and self-report a cancer diagnosis, I think that would be, even if it's just a little field that says retiree, and then we see the cancer cases, I think that would be worth information to gather too.
One problem I see is legal counsel, and I've not done any research on this, you know, into the
regulation, rules and regulations, but it doesn't appear there's any sanction or any penalty if they don't make these reports. Mm-hmm. And perhaps it might be worthwhile to have the commission look at having just an audit of TWC reports and compare it to the fire departments when we go through and do the inspections and certifications. And if they don't report correctly, then there'd be some sort of penalty or sanction or strike against them. And that would include the cancer and mental health as well. I think the way this is going, the commission needs to kind of beef that up and make sure all of that is put into the injury report.
There is a requirement, though, that they have to submit it to Texas Workers' Comp.
Right. But there's nothing, as far as I know, and as I said, I've done no research, there's no penalty if we go and do an inspection. We don't even have a TWC report, it sounds like to me.
Right.
But it seems
that they're not compliant.
Exactly. So why not bring the TWC reports and make that part of the inspection? We're going to compare the TWC report to your injury report, and if there's a difference, then you get a check mark or minus on your report.
If I remember correctly, that's the discussion that we had either last year or the year before that on the same topic and the end result. And correct me if I'm wrong, but what I remember is that when we were trying to find that bridge between us and the Workforce Commission, that there wasn't a viable option to get reliable data. We couldn't ask for it. We couldn't demand it. And I may be misremembering, but I want to say where we left off on that was the option that we wanted to discuss moving forward was having a requirement for each department to have a standing policy that the commission can review at any time that is part of the inspection process that says this is how injury reports are to be handled in my department. This is the pathway for reportables to workers' comp, how that goes to the chief training officer and how it's reported. I think that was the most encompassing idea that we had at the time. I don't know if that's changed as far as being able to get data from workers' comp and compare that at the individual department level, but I do remember we discussed having a policy in place for each individual department to have that pathway, and I think that's as close as we were going to be able to get to saying.
And Chief Anders is right. We can't pull data from SORM, which is the State Office of Risk Management, and to be able to identify. So if they input a report, they do not input a report, an injury report, that identifies that individual who was injured as a firefighter.
Well, but I don't know about y'all. I mean, we're not looking at names or even departments.
No, but there's still a way to skew that data out that they could give us that data of all the reports they have from the state to be able to tell us, yes, this is an injured firefighter or an injured chief or something like that. That data is not there. They don't collect that data.
For the sake of discussion, because what we're really trying to do here is create a redundant report.
Correct.
So maybe we should be talking to the right people to lobby to revise laws that if to help educate the Texas workforce and workers' compensation group to understand that they hold the information. We're willing to make the corrections to it or at least champion the process. Can we work together?
Correct.
Can you help us out? You already have the information. Now we're trying to put in a please send us a copy of that report so we can do something about it. If you told me right now, and Grace, your report is certainly going to be 1,000 times better than theirs, but I'd want to look at theirs as well as yours.
Yes. The problem with this, at least years ago when we actually went and met with workers' compensation people, and this was before Mike signed, this was when Tim Rutland was our executive director, they were willing to help us out, but there was no way for them to know if a report that came into them was for a firefighter. Like they might know that it was a city employee, but they're not going to break it down like, oh, this is an admin assistant, this is a dispatcher, or this is a firefighter. So there wasn't any way for us to get that information from them, if that clarifies it.
So how much money would we guess that is spent on the Texas Workforce Commission and workers' compensation group to collect data that nobody can do a single thing with because nobody can decipher, is it the janitors or is it the chief of a fire department or the city manager that got injured on the report?
Oh,
so
yeah.
Nobody can do
person.
Trending.
I don't know. I mean, what their requirements are. So, I mean, it must be, you know, a completely different
you got me curious.
Thing that they're working on, you know. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead. I'm sorry we derailed you on
No, it's okay. Did anybody else have any other thoughts or questions about that, or are we ready to move on? Okay.
Ready to move on.
I'm going to talk about the reporting rate, but only because we talked about it a little bit at the commission meeting, because one of the commissioners asked if the reporting rate was similar to, like, the last couple of years, or if it's going up or if it's going down. And so I went back and I looked at the last 5 years, and it was all between, like, 74% and 77%. So we're right in there. The number of departments that is using the injury reporting system is consistently going up every year, but the percentage, of course, depends on how many departments we have in total. So, yeah, that's what I can say about that. So I just wanted to mention it in case you all had questions about the reporting rate. It's pretty much been very consistent.
Is it possible to do a requirement for, like, quarterly reporting? I know to keep it kind of in track of where we're not having a year later somebody doing something. Is it possible for the commission to put something in place for quarterly reporting where it's notified, you know, it's that time of the year, if you haven't filled out your report, they need to be filed by this time for this I guess, time range. And if you don't have any injuries, if you're lucky enough to not have anything, then the button should be able to click to say, I have no reports for this time frame. Is that possible for those kind of regulations to take place from the commission as far as that just seems like a good practice to kind of put in there? Because you get somebody in there who doesn't know that and then they get that email to prompt them like, hey, you're 30 days out from the first quarter reporting mandate. Is that something that...
So you're saying just send out an email blast like every quarter and remind people to do their injury reports? Or confirm that they have no injury reports?
That's correct. Because you would see that 75% rate ultimately go up because they would have to click no reports for this time frame.
Right.
And start seeing...
I feel like that's possible, if that's what you're asking. I thought about this a lot because it comes up every year. We talk about it every year. I don't think it's going to change a lot of the data, to be honest with you. I feel like a lot of this is from departments that really don't have anything to contribute, you know, those one-man departments, two-man departments, whatever. but, yeah, we could give that a try.
Gracious, real quick, is the certification for that organization, is it held up if they haven't completed their yearly reporting up to date?
Certificate, nothing is held up, no. There's really no penalty.
Is there a concern with that if it's quarterly reporting that an injury report or reports would get lost in the paperwork process in that quarter, and by the time you close it out and say no injuries, if that information is made available to the department, and they're like, well, it's too late, or now I've got to go backtrack, is that too frequent?
It happens.
Yeah.
It happens with regularity. Like, it's 2024, we might still get reports from 2023. And, you know, I think the larger departments do a better job. They have a lot more staff, and they might have, like, one or even more than one person devoted to just putting in injury reports. And it's a lot harder for the smaller departments who, you know, maybe there's only a couple people, and they have all the jobs. They have to do all the everything, right? Because we kind of fall into that as a state agency. We're super small, and so while other agencies like TEA or something might have a whole department dedicated to, you know, one requirement that all agencies have to do, it might fall on me, and I've got, you know, five or six of those things that I have to keep track of. So I feel like it's harder on the smaller departments, and then there's departments that have turnover, and then people don't, the person who comes in next doesn't know what the requirements are, and they don't know who to ask, and, you know, there's just, it's just one of those things that we deal with.
Right.
And I've come to kind of accept it, so I don't have a solution for that right now, but yeah, I get what the concern is. But you're welcome to make any kind of recommendations you like. You know, going forward, we can always try and do more education or, you know, talk about it more.
Oh, one quick question, maybe to you, Grace or Cliff. So if you got, like, information from a 2022 injury or a 2023 injury, is that report immediately then updated with that information?
No. The report won't be updated.
So it ends up becoming lost data.
Right. I mean, it's not going to be a huge amount, but I'm just saying it happens regularly.
Okay.
But yeah. Does that information, you're talking about being able to download the injury report information for the department, would that information in theory still be in your department records where it's most vital to you, where you can download it and
yeah.
use it over years?
Yes.
So no change to the overall injury report, but still usable at the department level?
Right. The injury report, once it's final, it doesn't get updated because we submit it to the fire marshal's office, and they include it in their annual report. Plus, I need updating a whole report because of, you know, five injury reports that came in.
What about line of duty death from injuries sustained from that fire? So maybe the event happened in 2023, but the firefighter doesn't pass away until 2024. Is there somewhere on our report that we could have like a postmortem line of duty death fatality line? I mean, I feel like that's a pretty big capture event, because if I see a guy got burned in 2023, okay, hey, that's on the radar, somebody got burned.
Yeah, I think that has happened.
But then I see 2024, I mean, I think we've recently had it happen from roadway, working on a roadway mm-hmm. injuries. And
mm-hmm.
so I think that we've seen that now come about where now years after the report we see the firefighter passes away from the injury sustained on working off a roadway. And I think that's key for, especially as a firefighter and for my fire chief and for my local government, and recognize that, oh wow, it still is something that needs to be on the radar about working off a roadway. Those injuries could happen or death.
Yeah, if that comes up and I know about it, like if they contact me, I would tell them to submit a new report, because
right.
we want to capture that.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's voluntary reporting.
Right.
It's up to the department to do it. I mean, I can think of two incidents that's happened. The kid that got killed up in Lubbock.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Ironville. So.
Right.
So just that time frame of which the injury occurred until the LODD is such a great mass that
right.
it's just hard to capture that data
right.
that time span in between.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I think that I will go to page 16. I just wanted to briefly touch on fatalities. We had one reported to us. In the report, I noted about what was reported to the state fire marshal's office. So they had 10 firefighter fatality incident investigations during their fiscal year. Now, our report runs during the calendar year, so it's a little bit different. So 3 of those 10 deaths occurred in 2022, so they wouldn't be included. And then of the remaining 7 deaths, 5 were from volunteer departments, which TCFP does not regulate. So that leaves 2 deaths, and why did we only get one? So I kind of looked into that, into their report, and it looks like the other report was a suicide. So that's kind of a gray area for us. So I just thought I'd bring that up. I don't know if people aren't sure. Should they report that? Is that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's actually the gray area we're trying to address.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's where it gets to, we're going to have to tackle it just like we did cancer.
Yeah.
It's going to have to be a standalone page on this that the ugly truth is it's going to be, nobody's going to report maybe because of the stigma of it. What do we do? And it's going to take some colorful boxes with some bright color wording in there. And it's just going to take the continuous effort that I know Chief Wisco stands behind and y'all and the staff does as well, standing on that soapbox and preaching these things when we get in front of our fire chiefs is, this is not an admission of guilt, just like cancer. Cancer was such a huge thing where people thought in the fire department that the minute that they report that a cancer firefighter, like that event in their department, that was admission of guilt and they're going to have to pay it something. And that's not it. It is identifying that we had an event, we have a medical issue like cancer in our fire department, and we're reporting it to capture this information. Same thing goes with post-traumatic stress, with suicide, or anything like that. If a fire department decides because a crew made a really bad call and they're going to send everybody home that day because of just the mental stress on that, that's lost time. That's lost time that they should be reporting. And so they report that information, and that way we can kind of see that there's a resiliency of this. Most guys aren't going to want to go home, but those guys that do need to go home for a shift or have that continuous issue, maybe develop other things downstream, we can capture that stuff because that one right there, that little asterisk to page 16, like you're saying, that's the one we want to capture on a piece of paper for us to start breaking the walls of that stigma down. So I would think that our committee would come up with a recommendation today to try to at least add a page in this report that talks about suicide or mental stress, mental health, and figure out the recommendation for how to word that as far as the reporting challenges that we may see moving forward.
Okay, so from here, maybe we could talk about burns a little bit, and that would be page 28. And this was something that I brought up at the commission meeting. It just seemed to me like the burn injuries were going up. And I have no way of knowing if it's just because, you know, we're talking about the injury reporting a lot more, and so now more things are being reported to us, or if it's, you know, an issue with PPE or anything like that. So we talked about that a little bit. As you can see here with the head and the ear, in table 19, in the blue section, head, ear. It went from 9 last year to 23. And so that was kind of a big jump, and I happened to notice that. And then what else? Let's see. Upper extremities on the next page. The lower arm and the wrist, they seem to jump a lot too. And Mike talked about burns a lot at the last meeting, got on his soapbox a bit. He said he's been talking about it a lot at the regional meetings and stuff like that. And the compliance team has been doing a lot more investigations into burn injuries. And, I mean, if Rick wants to talk about that, he can. But I just wanted to bring it up and let you know that was something that kind of stood out to me, that we're getting more burn injuries reported, and I don't know. I just wanted to mention it.
Grace, is it on our reporting, does it allow you to put in there for just reporting for internal tracking? gear manufacturer, and that'll way if compliance sees, you know, PPE manufacturer A, we're seeing a large reporting of our burns, that maybe our compliance goes out there and looks at these things. Maybe it's on us that, like, we can identify maybe there's a trend going on right now. And maybe that the manufacturer doesn't even know that this is a trend going on right now. But it gives us that ammunition, but it also gives us that fire department, hey, we're seeing stuff across the state with PPE manufacturer A, and maybe we can acknowledge that. I didn't know if that's a possibility on a reporting that...
We don't have a specific field for that, but it could always be entered into the narrative portion of it. But maybe I'll let Rick speak to what they do in their investigating, if they look at that. About manufacturers, PPE manufacturing.
And it's not to say a manufacturer is doing a poor job, but maybe we're just, if we notice a trend that a lot of fire departments that use this particular brand of sock hood, that we're seeing some, you know, a growing concern, maybe that's something that we could put out at whenever we do these chief leaderships or these symposiums that we're seeing. It's kind of like if all the babies keep choking on this one toy, they put out a notice out there of, we're not saying this is a bad toy for your kid to play with, but it could lead to choking sometimes.
Well, and sometimes they have a recall.
Right, so. And then that's just kind of us doing our due diligence. Unfortunately, as a firefighter, I don't get to pick the gear I wear. Somebody else does. And usually it's somebody who's not putting that gear on a day-to-day basis, wearing it in a burning environment. So if I have that ability, that information's out there, and I get on a committee that gets to select gear, and I start looking at we're seeing something, kind of a bulletin, safety bulletin out there, maybe we start looking at the other alternatives to that gear.
So, Grace, correct me if I'm wrong, because when I read through here, I was looking, I saw the same thing that you're pointing out was a significant increase, but over the last 5 years, I don't see a decrease in any of the burn injuries. The only exception being is at the very top, the first table where you, table 18, the types, electrical burns have reduced, but that's not a very big number. But that's the only place I'm seeing in the subtype, I'm not seeing anything that's reduced. And I think that's if y'all would agree with this, I think one of the recommendations we should be making, once again, is insisting that all injuries are reported, because there's so many dynamics involved here. Did the burns go up just because we weren't reporting them 3, 4, 5 years ago? That's not acceptable, in my opinion. That's just not acceptable. But the reality is, did our fires double or triple? If we went to 3 times as many fires, well, we could reasonably expect the burn injuries to go up. So maybe the number went up, but the actual relationship to the fires went down.
Correct.
So that's how dynamic this is. And then you start adding in manufacturers, or you start adding in what type of fire tactics departments use, staffing levels. You know, there's so many things that could play factors into this that the fire service would want to know. So I know if you don't mind, I think that's one of the recommendations I'm going to make, which y'all tell me Chief Wisco is preaching when you do the regional meetings, is you got to report. We're not trying to give you another headache or a thing to do, but realize at the end you could be making a difference by reporting that.
Yeah, they hold the keys.
That's his main goal, is to get departments out there to report this stuff. So.
Well, I mean, we have a health and wellness committee now.
Correct.
They're going to need metrics. They've got to have hard, accurate data to trend anything that we're doing.
Yeah, that's one of the main reasons you're doing it, because that committee too, and plus those numbers, that data that we gather also helps at the legislative level. So.
Okay.
Rich, I got a quick question on the burns. Is there any way they can identify how many of those burns are related to emergency versus training? Like, in other words, if 20% or 10 of these burns are for training, to me that would be something that, if we're burning firefighters during training, that to me is alarming. And so I don't know if those burn numbers we see, I noticed that in the training numbers here, the training numbers went up they went up from last time, you know, 30 more burn injuries involved in skills training. And I'm just kind of curious to see if, you know, are those fire cadets falling off ladders, or are they Are the trainees are falling off ladders, or are they slipping and falling, or are they getting burned in burn buildings? And I think that, you know, getting burned in burn buildings would be alarming for me if we're still burning firefighters in burn buildings. That's, I don't know if this report captures that or not.
Yeah, this report, I guess it doesn't really capture that. I'll have to look into that. We may be able to capture that fairly easily. I need to look into that.
Would it help if we were just doing those specific subscales, like you were talking about upper arm or wrist? You know, mm-hmm. if we just took that instead of having you look over the trending of every burn injury that came through the reporting system, if you just looked at that small subgroup.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, and also, I mean, we do get burns from cooking, you know. Or maybe a chemical burn from working on something around the station.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Chief here.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to hop in because I think I can help with a little confusion. That part falls onto the compliance side, the investigation side of it. We've been banging the drum for 2 years now on report. Let us come out and take a look and all of that. We have the ability, when a fire department goes in and reports an injury, there are key factors that kick it over to compliance, and those are the ones that are investigatable injuries. It includes burns, failure of PPE, PPE failure to protect the firefighter, so on and so forth. That kicks it over to us, and then our team goes out and will determine whether or not a full investigation needs to occur or if it's an information-only investigation. Some of the stuff that we're doing with that is exactly what you were saying. We're maintaining right now it's an Excel spreadsheet of all of the gear to include the ID numbers, lot numbers, all of that. So we are looking for trends in that gear. We need more than just a year's worth of stuff unless it just jumps out huge like we did a few years ago. We had a piece of PPE that was very obvious that we had an issue. But we need that data. So we're developing that data now. We were able to get one guy this last budget session, and his sole purpose in life is to investigate injuries. We investigated 136 injuries last year. If it's a significant injury, we send a team of guys out. We go into the department. We work with the department. We work with their investigation team to develop a report. We develop a report along with their report. Most of the time it aligns pretty well. And then that report is given to that department. That department is they're the ownership of that report, and I always urge them to share that with the fire service community as a whole. So we're doing all of that stuff to answer your question to determine how, why, and how come. Absolutely. Our reports are detailing out what that firefighter was doing, what that activity was occurring, so on and so forth. The training injuries that we talked about, every one of them occurred in a burned building in 2023, and every one of them were investigated. We kind of have the same, we all kind of have that same thing. If we're burning firefighters in a burned building, we got something is going on. We've got several working theories as to why there was a 42% increase in burns. The first working theory, of course, is that we're out there banging the drum and we're asking people to report more often. Two, we've been working with IT to enhance getting those things kicked over to us early enough and quick enough so we can get out there and take a look at it. So that's theory one. Theory two, unfortunately, there is an anti-safety culture going on right now out there. There are some folks in the fire service that's preaching that be damned to the safety, go do your job, get in there, vacant building or not, it's your job to get in and accept the fact that you get hurt. So that's another theory that we're looking at. A third theory that we're working through, it's kind of in its infancy stage, but prior to COVID, most departments were able to order very specific gear, customized gear, if you want to call it that, that had a specific TPP rating, and most departments were getting gear, at least the risk assessments that we were looking at, that TPP rating was pushing up in the 45 to 50 percentile range. Post-COVID, it was almost impossible to get gear. We were seeing 18 to 22 month lead times to get gear, and when you were able to get that gear, it was what is slang terms called shelf gear. It's gear that comes off the shelf. It meets the minimum NFPA 1971 requirement, which requires only a 35 TPP rating. So now we've got firefighters that are accustomed to a higher, more protective factor, possibly doing the same tactics with a lower protective factor, almost a half on occasion of a protective factor that they're capable of. We're working on setting up some type of survey to get with departments out there and see what the logistics of that is and whether or not they've had to change their risk assessment from pre-COVID, what they were getting, to post-COVID, and having to go with a lower protective factor without potentially or possibly a change in tactics.
Thank you, Rick.
That's good information.
Yeah, very good. Okay.
That's all I have to say about burns, unless y'all want to talk about it.
Well said, Yuri. Listen, y'all been sitting here for an hour. Let's take a quick 5-minute break, you know, and then we'll come back and come up with those recommendations for the commission. So, 5-minute break.
Make sure you turn off your microphones, please.
Yeah, please turn off your mics.
If you talk like this,
it's meant to be like up here. Like there's a mic,
yeah.
Once again, real quick, those of you that are in the audience, if you have comments, questions, suggestions, feel free to come to the podium. Just state your name. I think you do have to fill out, do you still have to fill out that blue card or the blue piece of paper if you speak?
Yes.
Where did Cliff go?
For me to answer that question.
Yes, you do have to fill it out. Okay. But if you do have a comment or a question, feel free. You're welcome. That's why you're here and that's why we're here. So we'll resume. Grace, did you have something else to give to us?
The last thing that I was going to talk about just briefly is cancer, and that was page 32. So let's head over there. And it was just something that I noticed. I mean, I may be late to the party on this. But it seems like testicular cancer skews a lot younger than the other types of cancers. And I went back and I looked through a couple of years of the injury reports and found it to be quite consistent that it was just 20s, 30s, and 40s in terms of age when people were having these diagnoses for testicular cancer. So I just thought I'd bring it up because that could be a possible recommendation to maybe do some early screenings for that, or maybe some kind of education on the signs and symptoms. I mean, I don't know anything at all about it personally, but I thought I'd bring it up.
Okay, thank you.
And that's really all I had to discuss with you. Y'all had questions about anything?
I do not. Does anybody else?
The only thing that I could add to that, and I know it's been said, I hope it is said every year by every member, we absolutely appreciate the work that goes into it. We know that this is not an easy project. You all make it look exceptionally easy, but we very much appreciate having this data over consistent years because with good data, we can do amazing things, and that work is done by you.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
To echo that, Chris, just as your point, you know, you've picked up on possible suicide based on the data, right? You're also picking up on males with testicular cancer. Again, the data is phenomenal. and it's a shame that maybe we're not getting more value. But those of us who are looking at it see the value, and we know the work that it takes for y'all to compile this. So, yeah, I think we just have to get these fire departments to understand that it's huge what they're capturing. And with that information, then they can prepare their people better than we've ever been able to. So I applaud and commend all of the hard work and the commission and our little group as well, the thoughts that y'all have had. I think we're on to some really good stuff. Yeah, just keep banging that drum, yeah, for sure. So thanks again.
You're welcome.
Grace, with your cancer trending here, I'm looking through this list too. So the only time females are showing up is under, there's just one under unidentified, correct?
Correct.
Otherwise, everybody else was a male.
It was.
And I can tell you within my own organization, that number's not accurate. So I think that's one of the bigger concerns. I don't know if this would be an accurate statement, Cliff. You know, if you take the 15 largest fire departments in the state of Texas, that's got to account for 80% or more of the number of firefighters that were trending here. So when we say getting the word out, it's really, if we were successful in getting the word out to the 50 largest fire departments or the 100 largest fire departments, I think we'd be at least close to a 95% or more success rate in getting accurate reporting.
Correct.
So I think if we start trying to put a better emphasis on data collection so we have better metrics to work off of, so Grace can trend it and then we can comment on it and the commission can act upon it, I don't think we're looking at the entire state of Texas. I think we're just looking at the top 100 fire departments.
Correct. And the cancer reporting, even though we know since the beginning of time it's been there, it's come to the forefront just the last 2 or 3 years. So, and we've been enforcing that you need to report this stuff. Even if you find out about it, you know, after the fact, report it, because the numbers is what generates success for us and the Texas Fire Service as a whole. So, but yeah, so, I mean, just to get those numbers right there is a big improvement over what we used to get, was dang near zero.
Right. And I'll predict here within the next few years you're going to see some sort of national clearinghouse tracking and trending retired firefighters' health after they've left the fire service.
I thought there was one.
Well,
the cancer support network had one.
It's in the ground level of working. I mean, you still have the ability to go on and track it yourself and have some follow-up, but actual mainstream in it.
I mean, we're the only state in the country that's even working with the NFPA process, right? So what they do in New Jersey or Oregon is not the same as what we're doing here, but we would all agree it's relevant.
Because
we're in the same gear, we're doing the same
thing. Yeah, that's absolutely true, but there are a lot of eyes on the state of Texas just for stuff like this. So.
Right, so that's all the more reason for me to say let's get it right, because I know our commitment is to the Texas Fire Service and the firefighters in the Texas Fire Service, but I think we'd all agree, if it benefited the rest of the country, we're fine with that too. That's not a problem. So let's move on then to making some recommendations so Grace can get that put together so we can move that on to the commission. So I'll entertain in a discussion forum here if anybody wants to suggest something. If you'll go to page 35, was it, that had last year's recommendations?
Yes, sir. 35.
So this is what we had recommended last year. So let's just do this for the sake of brevity. Let's just wipe that slate clean. We can look at it and add any of that stuff back in if you'd like, or a combination of that, or reword it, or whatever you want to do. If you just want to put it back in, you know, let's do it. But right now we've got no recommendations, so.
I'd like to make a recommendation that we set aside at least one page of this report for mental health, where even if it reports zero this year, it still can outline the need for your department to document any lost time due to mental injuries, as far as mental health injuries, where lost time due to post-traumatic stress, you know, suicide attempts, or anything that pertains to that a department may have to actually log that lost time through workers' comp, or if they feel like just reporting that they had an issue that came about voluntary. That way that when that department does go through there and they do come across that page, and even if it has zero this year, that they're going to say, okay, that's something that we can report, but something that is acceptable for reporting, rather than to have to ask that question or search that field. It's right there. And if we can start the trend today where people are starting to do it, great. And that way it's not something new to them in a few years.
Okay. Does anybody have a second one? or wish to modify that in any form or fashion. I was writing most of what you said.
Please feel free to.
Is anybody, are you writing down what he's saying? Okay.
What's the expected return on that? What is that? What do you see that looking like for to be useful to us?
That department should be reporting it. For instance, Grace found that one was a suicide, and that's something that should have been reported, but they probably didn't know that they needed to report it. They didn't feel like it was something that goes into our report. And so if they see that that's an acceptable item to report for their injury report, it's similar how we had to do the cancer thing. Cancer was, nothing was in there, and it was some, just a empty line for a lot, for many years, until we just kept putting it out there, kept adding colorful boxes of wording, and then motivated people to say, okay, I'll go out on this one, I'll report from our department on it.
Perfect.
If I might interject, having dealt with TWC in the past, I understand they're very, they've got a big, lot of stuff on their plate, and expecting them to extricate out information regarding firefighters is probably not going to happen. Even though they should be motivated about reducing injuries on the job, obviously. However, what's to prevent us to require any fire department that sends an injury report to TWC to carbon copy us? That way, we get it directly. We get the information directly and don't have to go through TWC and try and extricate all this information that's going to take forever. But if they CC us when they send it to TWC, we got the information.
Well, in today's IT world, I can't comprehend how we have a redundant reporting process to start with. I mean, with one keystroke, you could just CC the Texas Commission on Fire Protection that we sent a report for two injuries or one injury or 100 injuries today, and at least the Texas Commission on Fire Protection would be aware.
Do you think that, just to play the other side, do you think it's getting lost more so not on the fire department side, but maybe city risk that's the problem? Like a fire, the training chief or whoever the department liaison is sending that into risk, and risk is looking at this, and that's where we're kind of dropping the balls, because risk is just falling to the TWC rather than somebody from the fire department is. Because I can tell you that's probably what happens on maybe in my department.
Right. Well, I would almost say, like, even the larger departments, that's where it could get lost, because now they may have a workers' comp coordinator that's representing the entire entity.
Right.
And they don't see the importance of this at all, where maybe a department your size is at least a little bit more focused. You know how many injuries you had last year. But to Antonio and my credit, you know, we couldn't give a number of how many burn injuries we had. I'd have to start looking at a lot of data.
I think it would have to come from rule from the commission to the entity and say that this is a guideline that for reporting, you shall report to us these things, any documentation. So I think that's the only way we're going to get it, is through actual mandate from the commission to these entities that we're protecting.
Well, I don't think we can accomplish that here today to try to figure out how to mandate that. I think maybe we should all, and anybody in the room that's here or listening online, that somehow, some way, that ball needs to start rolling.
Right.
I haven't heard anybody disagree with that, but maybe there's a reason we don't want it to roll yet. I know there's a lot of other things going on at the same time that might have a higher priority, but I'm not aware of what those are. This seems pretty important to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you want to word a recommendation to that, or is that just for discussion here right now?
It's rough not having Chief Lisco not here to kind of give us some guidance on maybe why that doesn't exist already. I would assume that in many years we've probably talked about why we should have a mandate for that, and ultimately why it's not happening right now. I do think it is something we need to do. It needs to be a mandate. It needs to be, the department needs to have, there's got to be something to hold them accountable for not following the rules, for not doing that. Right now it's voluntary, but it should be mandated. I'm all for suggesting a recommendation is sent up to the commissioners to put that as a working, you know, something we should be doing. But not having Chief Lisco to kind of give us some guidance, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if this is a Grace question or Cliff. The recommendations that we're making here, are they the recommendations to the commissioners, or is this the recommendations
to the state of Texas firefighters.
No, the recommendations that you're... Grace, you can answer that. I want you to answer that.
It's basically the same thing. What the commissioners need to do is make recommendations for the Texas Fire Service. And what they've asked you to do is give them some recommendations for their recommendations.
So I think we should do exactly what you just said. We should make that recommendation. It may never see print, but it's our communication to the commissioners that, you know, it's fine not to forward that out to the rest of the fire service. They're called their decision.
Right.
But they need to hear it.
Okay. I agree.
So do you want to reword that or restate that so Amanda's getting it, or do you have it?
I have it. So basically you're wanting an actual mandate by rule. That's a recommendation to the commission.
Okay.
Okay.
Requiring them to submit their injury reports. Yes.
Yeah.
However we can do that.
I like that.
We could either do that through having the departments do an SOG, or we could modify Rule 435.23, which is the injury report, just to say that this has to be done, find out who's responsible in the department for these workers' claims comp claims, and streamline that process where that information goes to the CTO or the fire chief. That person is responsible for report, shall report that to the commission if it hits these benchmarks. I think that would give us an increase in reporting.
Chairman, may I ask a question? And I'm sorry, pardon my ignorance. But just from the HR side of my knowledge, I know that all injuries are not always necessarily submitted to workman's comp. But on the fire service side, is that different? Because if it's connected with the workman's comp, submission, are we going to miss any possible injury reports on the commission side if it's connected with the workman's comp?
I'm not understanding why some of those reports would not be sent. That's kind of what you prefaced it with, right? So what is the rationale that you're thinking that they're not being reported? Other than the fact we know what they're not, but that's an omission to the rule, right?
I guess my question is, are all injuries significant or not? Are they reported to workman's comp on the fire service side?
I'm under the impression the answer is yes. I mean, that's what exposures are. I mean, exposure is not necessarily an injury at all, nor will it ever be a lost time. But it could be 2 years from now, or it could be 10 years from now. Same thing with falls or I mean, a lot of it is just first aid only, right? We're just documenting it. Doesn't that get mandated to be forwarded to workers' comp, or does it stay in-house?
I don't think so, I understand. What you're trying to say is that if a firefighter has an injury, and it's not necessarily reportable to workers' comp, but they just want to track that he had an injury, and that injury may be documented within the organization, but it will never possibly go to the workers' comp as something that is not the firefighter wants to deal with. He just say, look, I just cut my finger. Yeah, but we want to make sure we capture it. You have to report it anyway. And some of those injuries may not get up to the workers' comp as a reporting. I think that's what you're getting at.
Exactly. Correct? That was my question. Thank you.
But yet we still want to capture it in ours. So
I'm afraid we're muddying the water. So right now, there's a mandate for certain injuries to go to workers' comp, and we're not getting all of those. But now we're going to try to mandate the injuries without even going to workers' comp. I think we're going to fail miserably on that. We can't even get the data that is mandated to come to us. So why would we muddle? I agree with what you're saying. I don't disagree with that. I think that's a good idea. But
let's first get
the information that's mandated. When you tell me everybody's reporting and it's all coming to us like it's going to workers' comp, then I would be more willing next year to say, let's look at the injuries that don't get reported. But right now, we can't even get the ones that are required. I don't know. Maybe it is worth making that statement, though, that every injury is reported to the commission. Can we tweak that recommendation number 2 to just basically state any and all injuries?
So it's not just the ones you're reporting to workers' comp. I'm at a disadvantage here. I'm struggling with thinking about an injury on the job that was documented but wasn't sent to workers' comp. I'm failing to connect those dots. I'm not. Maybe somebody in the audience has an experience or an example with that. But I know if you any exposure or if you fall and hit your tailbone or your back, but you're no lost time. Nobody went to the doctor. Nobody went home. That's still documented and forwarded to the workers' comp coordinator, which I always assume is still sent to the Texas workers' comp.
That's a department specific of whether they do it, but by rule for the Texas Workforce Commission, you're only required to report an injury to the Texas Workforce Commission if it results in one lost day of work.
So anything short of a lost day of work, they don't track that?
No.
Your agency may.
That might be the SOP for your department, but that's not the Texas Workforce Commission.
Well, I can sit here and tell you I've had repeated injuries, including burns, that I never went home, never went to a doctor. But it was written down. But if all it did is go into a file drawer in my organization and never left that drawer, then we're clearly not getting other data that we need to have.
Frank can probably back me up on this. It's called a city covering their assets. So that's the liability form on the city side.
So we're assuming that a lot of the reports here are injuries that did not go to workers' comp to begin with. There's something that their organization, Vince goes and does a report. They're going to report Vince to the fire commission that he was injured, but Vince is reporting everyone to the fire commission, I mean to the workers' comp. But we're still capturing here as part of the reporting requirement for the injury reporting, correct?
Correct.
So now, in my mind, we've just really confused this whole scenario. So to Grace's part, she's collecting data that says here's injuries that never did get reported to the Texas Workforce Commission. That might be news to you, but it's news to me right now, but that's what I'm hearing.
Which I don't think there's anything really wrong with that. I think that on the fire commission side, I think what we're doing is just trying to capture how firefighters get injured or ill. And we want to capture regardless if it goes to the workers' comp or not. I think our job here is to capture those that don't even get sent up to that process of the workers' comp. I'm assuming that's what the injury reporting system is for, correct?
And I do know, well, Grace can back this up, say it's correct or wrong, but I'm pretty sure in the injury report, when you make the injury report in there, a checkbox that says, did this injury result in lost time?
Right.
Yes or no? Isn't that right?
Well, that I understand. I mean, I was under the impression that the majority of workers' comp injuries don't result in loss of time. I mean, tell me what an exposure report does.
That would be a Texas Workforce Commission
report. Right. But you have some experience with it, so do you. So between Amanda and Frank, you can weigh in on that. Maybe we need to just table that for another day for getting better educated from the Texas Workforce Commission.
Well, I think you're still on to something. I mean, if you were to capture the data, then at least you've got something to look against. So if they've got 5 reportable injuries to Texas Workforce and they reported no injuries to TCFP, then you've got an issue. You know, but by not having the workforce numbers, you don't have a clue. We don't have anything to look against. So I think you're still on to something. If we could capture the information, then you could just see that they are, in fact, reporting their injuries. Because today you have nothing, Chief. If they elect to not report any, we have to assume that they had no injuries because we have nothing to verify that with. And I think that's what you were after, was if you could get something from the workforce that says that they had 5, and they reported to us 5, then we'd probably feel good that they're at least reporting, you know. But today we don't have that. So if they just checked the box and said they had none, we have to assume that's accurate.
Okay.
I think you're still on. You know, it's the right approach, and it's probably still a recommendation to continue to ask to put more teeth into the process, whether we can get information from the workforce. Frank, all of that would be useful, but we need something to quantify is the information accurate or not.
Okay.
Well, if you'd like, I'd be happy to do some research on what TWC requires and just the framework on what's reportable, what's not, you know, and that sort of thing, and put out some sort of report, distributed report about that to y'all.
That would be very, very beneficial for both us and the commission.
Okay.
Okay, so we've only gotten two recommendations so far. Is that all you have, Amanda?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'll entertain a third one.
One recommendation that somebody else talked about was that self-reporting, and I don't know if we've really covered it, but I think that it would be nice to have the ability to self-report for retired personnel, if for no one else, but where they could report or capture the information after they've retired. I think that would be nice to capture that information one way or another. I think we've talked about it, said we should be able to do that, but I think we ought to try to capture the information, and I'm thinking just for retired personnel, if for no one else.
So the recommendation would be that the commission would develop a tracking system or application process for self-reporting?
I'm just thinking some way to self-report for retired personnel.
Maybe if it's even as easy as logging into your FIDO account, if you still have access to it, and being able to just go to self-report, you know, injury or illness, you know, occupational injury or illness or whatever, and then it takes them to just a field where they can, you know,
like a narrative.
Well, I get the feeling this is the time where Chief Wisco would interrupt us. Okay. Because we've delved off into the wrong end of the pool.
I can hear that.
We're way out in the weeds. We're hunting rabbits. We can't hunt them. So my recommendation is that you guys give the recommendations individually. Give me a recommendation, and then we need a motion and a second. We vote on each individual recommendation, because we've got like three of them out here going separate different directions, so we need them individually.
Sure. Well, let's comprise the list first, because we could have overlap here, and then we'll come back to it. Because, I mean, we're not trying to do 50 of these things. As a matter of fact, I think 8 might be a little too long from last year, so if we just get a couple. I think in some years, Grace, didn't we only have 4 or 5 recommendations?
Oh, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
Right. We're not required or held to a number here. So I'll interject a third one here, if you would, for the sake of, I think the roadway safety and traffic incident management practices should be reiterated, that departments should make sure. I think number 5 last year, it said continue to review and practice roadway safety and traffic incident management practices. I'm fine with wording that differently if anybody has a better passion on it. But I think we should reiterate the traffic concerns, because that's still one of the biggest risks that I think a firefighter is facing in our world today. So,
when y'all go out and we talk about policies or practices, do y'all have like a database built where somebody can review how another city that has working off a roadway? Do we have like where we could share those if we find the department's really good at that, or there's multiple fire departments? And department's like, man, I don't know where to get started on this. And rather than them try to send out through the Texas Fire Chief or Firefighter Association stuff, they can ask, do you all have any kind of guidance on this? And you could say, hey, here's 5 or 6 departments that have really good policies for you to look at and ask questions. And
you're talking specific department SOPs?
Yes, sir.
We don't have anything to do that, because we just give templates for SOPs and recommendations, okay, what you have to have. That would be communication between the departments themselves.
Okay.
And I do know there's a lot of sharing between departments with SOPs, because a lot of them, Rick's guys can go to Brownsville looking at an SOP and go all the way up to Leifers, and
right,
by golly, they're voted just alike, but the only thing that changed was the name of the fire department.
That's right.
So, but yeah, that would be the communications between the, okay, the administrative staff, or not the administrative, the executive staff of the department. So, and I know there's a lot of networking going on, like Texas Fire Chiefs Conference and Texas Fire Chiefs Association stuff, and that stuff could get out there really easily.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Anything
else? So, to be clear, right now I have 4 recommendations.
I've got another one, ma'am. I guess, or it's either 2 or 1, but see on number 6 here, our current one, it says review of all department SOPs with focus on injury prevention. I know that they show skeletal there, but some wording in that sense in regard to training, and then another one in regards to wellness and fitness. If you look at the numbers of training, we're injured firefighters, we increased in firefighters in training, and also in wellness and fitness. You know, we're hurting our firefighters trying to maintain fitness, and to me, I think those two areas need to be looked at in the SOPs in regards to how they're doing both of those, because I think those numbers are kind of high.
So could we just take that first part of that sentence in number 6 from last year and just state, review all of your department SOPs with a focus on injury prevention, period?
Possibly.
And then with an extra focus this year as a recommendation to training?
And wellness and fitness.
And wellness and fitness. Because that way that would stand alone, because that way I think the first statement, we're talking about every SOP that's safety oriented in my book is important. And we're not down, but we obviously have trending that shows there's a different focus this year a little bit. Burns should be maybe thrown in there as well, but that's a little more complex. Would that work for you, Vince?
I think so. I just wanted to make sure that we showed an emphasis that we're hurting firefighters during training as well as wellness and fitness.
Okay.
I think those are two areas that...
Yeah, and those seem like two areas we should certainly have a control over, too,
so
correct?
Basically, we would be making that first up to prevention as one sentence, and then basically removing the skeletal injury portion and replacing that with training, wellness. I'm sorry, training and wellness and fitness.
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
Is everybody good with that?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Okay. So now we've got... 5? Is that the 5th one you're writing, Amanda?
I do have a question, though. Cliff, on number 8, for the review injury trends for your individual department, or Rick can answer this question. So it's my assumption that it's still every year for continuing education, we have to review this with our departments as a continuing education, or is that still a mandate that we have to do?
Correct.
Every year?
The review of this injury report is the required CE.
Correct.
That, this was put in as a recommendation as a direct result what Grace was talking about a while ago. So when you log into the department finder, if you have access to the injury reports, you click on injury reports up in that green ribbon that's up top, there is the word data. You can click on that word data, and it just brings up another page, and you give it a starting date and an end date. Now, you can take this report and use it as a CE, but you can also run your specific department's injury reports and let the firefighters look at it too, just to see kind of the trends that are in the department. It's hard for guys doing operations and stuff like that because they're like all of us, I want to charge them. They're like, oh yeah, they got hurt, but I didn't get hurt. But when they start getting specific to that department, it's a little bit more, it's home a little bit harder.
That's correct. I mean, that's the same. One of the growing trends in throughout the state, but obviously for individual departments as well. Mm-hmm. And I think comparison both. So, yeah.
And reviewing that report, that was originally a recommendation from the Health and Wellness Committee that came through this committee.
Correct.
That we blessed, that went to the commissioners, and the commissioners endorsed it as well. So
that was just a clarification. I just wanted to make sure that we were good with that.
No, you're right on track. Right. Any others? Daniel, I know you have a lot of information on the 1851, and that's referred to in here about PPE. I think we should still have a recommendation of some sort, maybe that kind of encompasses these.
Yes, sir. Really, for the most part, I think it's just reviewing that 1851 continuously, looking at the changes that are coming about and some of the recommendations. But I think that's where we really need to highlight on, is just that the departments are looking at being compliant with that as far as having their own policies put into place. And I know that currently the commission does look at the things that they're doing right now internally to be compliant with it, as far as deconning and the life of gear and making sure it meets the expectation, but just good practices.
Okay.
And then just to highlight on one thing for the, when we talked about the mental health stuff, mm-hmm. we can reference Texas House Bill 2143 from the 86th. 2143. And that's the presumptive law for post-traumatic stress.
Mr. Chairman, can I make a suggestion for that one?
Yes.
For 1851? Whatever Daniel suggested is fine, but I would say 1851 slash 1850, because 1850 is what 1850 is changing to for the consolidation.
Okay. And that encompasses the decontamination issues as well, doesn't it?
That man, Rick, is well versed on 1850. Well, as much as an FPA let us read it.
Okay.
What episode did you say? 86.
Okay, so what specifically are you looking at? So NFPA is combining standards. So 1850 is going to combine with 1851, 1852. So it's going to have everything to do with the maintenance, care, and cleaning of. And it's going to be your PPE, SCBA, so on and so forth. One of the problems that we're going to have a lot of time is that there are going to be standards within that standard or subsections that we, TCFP, do not have the authority to regulate. So we're going to have to go in and pick the little pieces out of there. The current 1851, or the PPE maintenance and care section, will be part of the 1850 standard. It's my understanding they've pushed it back to 2025 for a final vote date, and then they're going to think 2026 now is when they're saying that it may possibly come out. So that it will still have the, if the NFPA committee decides to continue to include the on-scene wash-off and stuff, it would be in the 1850 standard when it comes out. The commissioners do have the authority to extend that out 1 year from the date that 1850 or whatever the new standard is comes out, for everybody to do what they need to do on a financial side or training and so on and so forth to get everybody up to speed. It's going to take a lot of work, unfortunately, by us, TCFP staff, and you guys, the advisory group, to pull all the pieces out and be able to interpret them and understand them the way they need to be, and then have them ready to go when we need to have them. And 1851 is very involved. 1850 seems to be even more involved. I can't speak in specifics because everything is rumor. All I have been privy to is the first draft, and I've already been told there's going to be several changes on the second draft before it's voted on. So
Rick, would you suggest then that we do the 1851/1850 or just stay with 1851 for now?
I retract my statement. Stay with 1850, yeah. Since the commissioners have the leeway of pushing it out a year, because
right.
It may be next year's annual report that you guys make that recommendation, because by then they should have the specific sections of 1850 that will apply.
Okay. Everybody clear on that?
And you can always say appropriate NFPA standard.
True.
Let's just go with that. I'm good with that.
Yes, and as general counsel, you want to be as vague as possible without, so that people can't throw bombs at you. So it's a good idea.
You're giving away your tricks as the legal world. Okay. Anything else you guys want to add? So are you suggesting that we take these one at a time to vote on them? Because I know on our agenda it's just a review and recommendation to the commission for the entire list of recommendations. So
I would advise articulating each of the recommendations and just asking, you know, do I hear a motion, second, is there any further comment, and then vote on it.
Okay.
On each one.
All right, I'm fine with that. Amanda, are you ready to go with that? once again, anybody want to add anything else to this list? Okay, we'll have an opportunity at the end in case when she's reading this, maybe we realize we omitted something, we can probably throw it in there at the end. But so let's start with number one.
Okay.
Do you need time to put it all together? A few minutes or something?
Well, I have my notes here, and I can summarize it for you. And if y'all want me to add anything or take away or clarify something that I may not have. So this is not going to be necessarily exactly the way that it's going to go into the minutes because, I'm sorry. So the first one, I have set aside at least one page for the mental health, so that the lost time for any mental health injuries can be reported, even if that has a zero page for this year. It's to get the word out there that that's an appropriate injury to report, and it gets that into people's minds. And you had mentioned Texas House Bill 2143 for the 86th legislature. Is there anything?
I thought Dana, you had mentioned about some about a need to document any loss of time.
And I think that's what she said. She may have mentioned that anything that's reportable lost time. So.
Okay. So, does that read?
That reads
right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion if you guys want to accept this as our first recommendation.
I'll make a motion.
Okay, Danielle Anderson has a motion.
I'll second it.
Vince has a second. Any other discussions or comments? None? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? All right, so moved. All right, number two.
So, y'all are looking for an actual mandate from the commission, whether that be by rule. It would have to be by rule if it's going to be a mandate. It's to receive any information for any or all injuries or incidents, regardless of whether it goes to workman's comp or not.
I think that sounds accurate to what we were asking. Anybody want to wordsmith that a little different?
Can we add the time frames in there? I think it was 10 days. What was it? Cliff, on the days for the serious injuries and then the minor injuries?
Well, that's already in the rule, right?
Yeah, it's already in the rule. It's in 435.
435.
I think 2.25.
0.23.
0.23.
So we're requesting a mandate for a rule that already exists, or we're suggesting that we push this out to the departments to make sure that they review that they're staying in compliance with the rule.
Would you like for me to read the rule as it exists right now?
Sure.
If you I think have it pulled up.
Okay.
Get to the right page.
Because if our recommendation to make it mandatory, may it be already mandatory based on that rule.
Did have it pulled up. I apologize. Give me 1 second. So 435.23 says a regulated entity shall report all Texas Workmen's Compensation Commission reportable injuries that occur to on-duty regulated fire protection personnel on the commission form. Minor injuries are those injuries that do not result in the fire protection personnel missing more than one duty period or does not involve the failure of personal protective equipment. Minor injuries shall be reported within 30 business days of the injury event. So then the major injuries are those that require the fire protection personnel to miss more than one duty period. Major injuries shall be reported within 5 business days of the injury event. And then it talks about investigatable, and those are required within 5 business days. And I can read that out if you want the whole.
No, I think, so to y'all's information, so 435.23, that's
correct.
What you were referring to. So what if we just made a recommendation to the, because this is a recommendation to the Texas Fire Service, that they review 435.23 and make sure and verify assured compliance with it. Because this is a relatively new revision, and if we don't like it at any given time, we have the ability to revise this. But it would have to go through the entire process for a rule review, but we can do that. So why would we just, instead of saying we mandate the commission, which we don't have the authority to do, but we're throwing these words to the commissioners can, but right now we're just wanting to push out to all the departments and agencies that they understand and are in compliance with 435.23. Does that sound?
Yeah, I think that hits the mark on it.
And it, if we say 435.23, we'd probably have to put that actual heading so that they know what they're looking for and what they're reading. I'm not sure what
it
says.
I think they do under, on page 36, under Texas Administrative Code. It is a link there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what I was saying in the word then, so if we're saying a review in assured compliance with Rule 435.23, fire protection personnel injuries, that would probably be the designation.
I agree.
I kind of like this because this is, you know, I won't throw the folks that are in attendance under the bus, but there's a lot of departments out there that probably have not read 435.23. I mean, this hasn't been out there for very long. There's been a version of it for quite some time, but it was recently revised because we did the 435 process, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2022,
yeah.
I got it.
End of December.
Sorry.
Okay.
End of December of 2022.
Okay.
So it's been a little over a year, almost a year.
Yeah, so not very long. So I think if more departments realize that this isn't, they understand this or at least see that this exists, that might help our injury report to accomplish what we're trying to get them to accomplish. So did we word that right? Amanda, or does it look like a mess?
No, it's fine.
All right. I'll entertain a motion then to accept this as another recommendation.
Make a motion to accept that verbiage.
Okay, Daniel Buford's making the motion.
Second it.
Antonio Ramos, second it. All right, any discussion?
Only thing would be, just to be the same, it looks like it's written that 435.23 says firefighter injuries. Instead of, I think we just said firefighter personnel, something like that.
Fire protection personnel injuries is what it says in the administrative code.
Okay, so on here, then it's abbreviated. Okay, I just wanted those two to be the same, so.
Okay, so we'll like it as it is then? Okay, so I have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? All right, so moved. So we have the second one done. All right, the third one, Amanda.
So develop a tracking system through the agency, possibly FIDO, for self-reporting, which would include retired firefighters.
And I think it sounded like that may be problematic trying to do that, or y'all want to still try to push that along?
I think we would want to throw it out there so that at least the commissioners can see it. I don't think we can solve it with this injury report recommendation, but I think it gets the ball moving in the right direction.
Okay.
Would it be more effective to put that on the retiree or the department? Because I'm thinking a retiree may not have access to a FIDO, but a department may have that knowledge of a retiree. Then the department can do their due diligence and report that retiree's diagnosis.
But I think the problem right now is whether it was the department or the retiree, there is no process in place for reporting it.
Right.
So, and once again, how do you enforce the, you can't enforce the retiree to report it. So, but right now we have no clearinghouse for that. So I think that's what we're trying to discuss, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. So stay broad with that. We would like to recommend that it be reported one way or another.
Or that there's a process in place that allows retired. I don't think I should. Let's change that word retired.
Right.
Former.
Correct.
Firefighters, because we don't want to eliminate termination or resignation or somebody moved on to another career but still had occupational cancer from the fire service. And especially to Grace's point, you know, you're sharing with us now folks as young as 18 years of age or 25 years of age, that are battling some of these cancers. So they didn't retire, but they may have moved on to another career. So let's say former Texas State firefighters or former firefighters.
Fire personnel, maybe?
Yeah, let's not use firefighters because now we're eliminating inspectors and investigators and anybody else. Let's just say fire department personnel.
Fire protection personnel? Is that the way it's stated?
That means better for you?
Mm-hmm. That's the way it's stated in 419.
Okay, then let's marry that up.
So should I remove the FIDO suggestion just because, I mean, if the former fire personnel does not have access there, I mean, it sounds like you are just looking for the agency itself on the website to be able to have an ability for former firefighters to submit on their own.
I think our recommendation is just that there's a process, that we realize we need to create a process because we have no process right now.
Okay.
So I don't care if it's just they need to put it in an envelope and mail it by snail mail and
right.
Send it in. That would be at least a start, but right now we have nothing. So we're just saying that now's a good time for the commission to step up and say we need to do something about the former firefighters that could be battling occupational injury and illness from their careers.
All right. So I have developed a tracking system, in parentheses, create a process, through the agency for self-reporting for former fire personnel. Okay.
Yeah, I think there you said self-reporting. You might just say for reporting.
Okay.
And this should say fire protection personnel.
To Frank's point, we keep it as vague as possible because maybe it's a spouse or a family member that's having to report for somebody else. So
we just want the information.
Gotcha. Yeah, to your point, that's exactly
so
what we're
on. I took out the self.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion then for this recommendation.
I'll make that motion.
Okay, Daniel Anderson.
I'll second it.
Okay, Keith Schmidt has seconded it. Any further discussion? Any questions? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? All right, so moved. All right, Amanda, what was the next one we had?
So the next one we have is where we're going to the number five.
Traffic incident management?
Correct.
I don't know how you make that much shorter than what's there. Continue to review and practice roadway safety and traffic incident management practices. Struggling with how you're going to...
Yeah, I don't have a problem with the way that was worded.
Yeah.
All right.
You might just follow number five as written.
Okay, number five we're saying is continue to review and practice roadway safety and traffic incident management practices, period.
Okay.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
Make a motion.
Antonio made the motion.
I'll second.
Danny Buford seconded it. Any discussions or questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, so moved.
Okay, so for the fifth one, we're looking at number six on page 35. Review all of your department's SOPs with a focus on injury prevention, period. I don't know how you want it, but I wanted to emphasize training.
Health and wellness.
Wellness and fitness in the SOPs. So I'm not sure how you want me to...
We could just say with an emphasis on training and health and wellness.
So no period at the end of prevention with
sure
emphasis.
You know,
on
can we have it two sentences?
Y'all can have it however you want.
Yeah, I just like that standalone sentence because that kind of... I don't want to omit any other SOP that focuses on injury prevention. We're not trying to water that down or downplay it. We're just saying for this year, for 2024, we're putting an emphasis, or the word especially from last year, but emphasis, or Vince, you're the one that kind of...
Well, I think what I was thinking was when you look at the injury report and you take the numbers and you look at the injury report at hand, you have an increase in those two areas. And so not saying that we're going to downplay any other area, but if we have an increase in an area that I think that is truly preventable, training and physical fitness, that wasn't the intention of the recommendation, was to emphasize the SOP review in regards to wellness and fitness, and then review the wellness or the SOP in regards to firefighter training. I know firefighter training already has a standalone initiative for, and I believe that is 435-27. Maybe that's something that, like we kind of did with that the injury reporting, but I just don't know how to do it away. I think that when we look at the injury report, the recommendation, I know we had a recommendation at the time last year, was to emphasize on skeletal injuries because we saw an increase in those areas. I was trying to mirror the same recommendation for wellness and fitness and training since we've had increase in those two areas.
So are you comfortable then with just leaving number six as we had it worded last year and just replace the words skeletal injuries that result from lifting and moving objects in patients with health and wellness and training, or training and health and wellness.
That affects that. You know, this recommendation, basically, we can now focus on two areas that we saw an increase in numbers in an area we shouldn't have increasing.
So let's go back to your suggestion, putting the comma in there, and then we'll just replace those words with the training and the health and wellness, because that's what we're identifying as trends this year that warrant extra review.
Okay, so quick question then before we move on. Previously we were talking about wellness and fitness. Now we're talking about health and wellness. How do you want that worded?
I think it was wellness and fitness. Is that where you're going?
Let me see how it was worded on the injury, on the actual injury itself. I think Grace categorized it in a way that I think that it kind of, it was self-explanatory. Let me find that page here. She put wellness slash fitness. And then the other one was skills training is what, the increased number of skills training was what the other emphasis was. And that's based on page 15 of the injury report.
So we're going to emphasize skills training and wellness slash fitness.
Right.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Okay. Does that read right for you, Amanda?
Yes, sir.
All right, I'll entertain a motion.
Make a motion.
And Daniel Buford?
I'll second.
Vince Prigio makes the second. Any discussion? Any questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, so moved.
Okay, so the last one that I have was number six is... Basically, y'all wanted to review, you want everyone to review the NFPA standards for compliance. Is that correct? I want to make sure I got that right, because I know we were talking about 1851 and kind of keeping that, but then y'all mentioned the NFPA.
I almost say you just repeat number one again.
Yeah. From last year?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that reads NFPA 1851, Standard on Selection, Care, and Maintenance of Protective Ensembles for Structural Firefighting and Proximity Firefighting, as required by state law. I think that should have said as, but it says is.
Yeah. Right.
It'd say as. Does that read right to you?
Probably so. I think... Once, like Cliff said, once we start getting down and they start combining them, then we can kind of make it more. But if we just put NFPA, you know, recommendations, that's a pretty vague, and that's a lot. So let's kind of give some guidance on what we're trying to talk about. If it is what we're talking about with PPE and making sure, even just some of the things that we talked about today with Rick and how we're seeing PPE not matching along the same guidelines throughout the department, maybe this just kind of spurs and encourages them.
Okay.
So, just we're gonna for number the sixth suggestion, we're just gonna repeat number one.
Yes, ma'am.
From last year, as number six.
as number six.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
But instead of is, it would be as required, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, mm-hmm. You're going to make that. There was a typo from last year.
As required.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? I have a motion and a second, right? Or do I?
No, I didn't get it.
No.
Okay.
So moved.
There's a motion. Okay, you have Vince making the motion.
I'll second.
Okay, Daniel, I understand with the second. Any other discussion or questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So moved.
A concern would be now, what order do we want to submit them in?
I don't know if that's significant. I'm not worried about that.
Just afraid they may think that there's priorities there.
No. Grace, in the past, was there a value system to number? Because once again, this is going to the commission. The commission gets to tweak it however they want to. If they want to move number six to the top, it's their call to do that. So we're just giving them the basket. We'll let them sort that out. Does that sound accurate?
Mr. Chairman, and Grace can back me up on this too. If it doesn't have a numerical value the way they're listed, I would change the numerical system and change them to bullet points.
I like it better.
Okay.
Yeah, totally like that.
I'm fine with that. And once again, the commission has the right to come back and put numbers in front of them if they'd like. So we're just giving them our opinion and our recommendation as the advisory committee, and they can take it from there. So are you guys comfortable and good with this as our recommendations from this year's injury report?
One other thing I'd like to bring up, and I don't know that it needs to be a recommendation, but I think we probably need to talk about it. That is obviously that the fire service is mostly male. But we've got injuries that females are having, and they're not reporting them. And my guess would be that, again, for the sake of possibly feeling weak by reporting an injury, they're not reporting them. And so it's just something that I think we probably ought to put out in public, that we need all injuries reported, male and female, and it should not, it's not an indication of the, you know what I'm saying? I'm afraid that there's a stereotype or there's a reason why they're not reporting them today. So just would like to bring it out, right?
Yeah, and I think even just talking here in this room, probably without a motion or putting it on paper, we're kind of giving staff, because you're out there doing the town hall meetings or the regional meetings, so that can easily be passed along, because y'all have shared that Chief Lisco is passionate about getting compliance in the reporting from any and all, you know, injury, regardless of who it is. So I think we're on the right track heading that way, but I appreciate your point sharing that. Do you feel like we need to go put that wording back in there somewhere?
I was just wanting to just say it out loud.
Okay.
So it's public, right? That we need to really pay attention to what our females are doing in the fire service as well, and make sure those injuries are in fact being reported.
Okay. All right. Grace, anything else in the injury report that you need from us?
No, I've got nothing else.
Okay, I'll echo the comments you've already heard from several other members on the committee, but we really appreciate what you do.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. All right. Let's see if we can wrap up here, because everybody's getting hungry for lunch.
All right. Looks like
my
idea 11 times are right. Let me go back.
Sorry.
So I guess we are now to discussion item number 5. Discussion and possible action on 37 PAC Chapter 469 Technical Rescue.
All right, Cliff, I'm not mistaken. This has already been in front of the commissioners. They've sent it back to us. So at their next meeting, this will actually be completed and enacted, correct? They're just asking for our blessing from
them? Correct. They just want another set of eyes to look at it, to know it over.
Okay.
They've looked it over and everything is good. And if it stands, it goes back to the commissioners and they approve it, this will actually start on October 1 of this year.
Okay, and I spoke with the curriculum and testing committee who met earlier this week, and I know this is a concern of theirs. Also, I know the ad hoc committee that was responsible for doing this put in a lot of work in a very short period of time to get this in place, and it's very important for them that deadline that we get this completed is...
And it wasn't a pushback, it was a request from several stakeholders that the that the implementation of this was pushed back to October, so they would have a chance to be able to budget for it, because just this certification in itself, and it's not TCFP side, this voluntary certification, is very expensive to get all the requirements in place to begin with.
Okay.
So they wanted to be able to look at it, budget for it, see what they needed to do, so they could get the numbers out there to their city councils and city managers to request it. That's the reason it was pushed back to October 1. It's actually been done for a little while, but they would just
right.
push back.
So every bit of this is new wording. There's no other revisions that had been taking place through the process have already been completed. So we're accepting this document as it stands in its entirety right now. Cliff, have you gotten any input? I have not seen any emails or phone calls or anything expressing a concern or a question or delay or...
We've had some questions, and there's no concerns. It's just that we've had some questions about people, how they qualify for it, and maybe they took a rope rescue course from a certain provider, and they're not on our provider list of the approved A and B list courses. As long as it follows NFPA 1006, they will be able to qualify for it.
So you guys have all the tools in place to make that determination?
We're ready to go. The testing is ready. All the system is there. We're just waiting for to tell IT to turn it on.
Okay. Well, we're not here to muddy those waters for you guys. So you don't need anything else from us to revise this?
No, sir.
Okay.
May I address?
Yes, please.
Okay. So... I'm looking at this, and I wasn't in the last commission meeting, so I apologize, but something that we need to note. So 469.7 reserved for ISAC, that needs to be removed. The Texas Register will kick it back to us, because 469.7 is already assigned to the commission as a rule, so you don't need to reserve that number for anything in particular later on. So in the future, if we want to add an ISAC, section of the rule, we can do so, but it would go into whatever, you know, the suit was at the time for that section.
So what you're saying is this would kick the registry back out, so this could hiccup the whole plan?
Yeah, so if y'all could possibly... in your motion
recommend
to remove 469.7 and then also in section B 469.207.
So let me make a statement. You guys are going to have to make a recommendation to change it anyway, because in one part it says 469.7, you go to the next one it says 469.207.
yeah, it's out of sequential order there.
Well, there's two different things. They're both reserved ISAC, so...
Right. I mean, you could make a general for the whole entire chapter to eliminate the reserved ISAC verbiage from each section.
So for this to be clean enough to get through the process, it would behoove us to delete these two clauses.
Correct, because the lead time it takes for us to submit stuff to ISAC, them to look at it, to approve it, we would have plenty ample time to be able to submit the stuff to them, get them to approve it, and then get this back into them.
Okay.
Correct.
So do you need a motion to approve the section 469 with those two changes? Or
yes.
Or
we don't need to take them separately, just as one. If I'm not mistaken.
Remove the reserved ISAC verbiage from
chapter 469. I'll make that motion.
Okay, so I have Keith Smith making the motion that we accept this and move this on to the commission for final adoption with the deletion of 469.7 and 469.207, both ISAC references.
Second.
Who seconded? Daniel Buford second. Okay, any other discussion?
On the special temporary provisions, and I could be misremembering completely, have we ever in the past during the grandfathering period exempted a testing requirement for certifications that had a IFSAC seal? Does that make sense?
So you're saying somebody that comes in with an IFSAC seal for rope rescue and stuff?
Yeah.
During the grandfathering period, there's no requirement other than you have the training that is attested to by your training chief. If you have an IFSAC seal, then you have an IFSAC seal. There's nothing bearing. So if you have the training and you have an IFSAC seal and I have the same exact training without an IFSAC seal, we don't exempt me from qualifying during the grandfathering period as long as I meet the same parameters as you do. It's just that you were lucky enough to get an IFSAC seal for your rope rescue and awareness. Is that what you're asking?
Both of those certifications would still require a commission exam for certification.
Correct. Because we do not accept IFSAC seals for rope rescue yet.
Okay. Not,
until we are approved by IFSAC to issue our own.
When are we going to do that?
Well, we have to go through the grandfathering period first, and I will tell you that each discipline that you submit, IFSAC charges you. Correct me if I'm wrong, Holden. Is it $1,000 per discipline for review?
Oh,
for IFSAC? Yes. Yeah, it's, and they're getting ready to have their conference, so I'm sure that fee will go up. The only time it's reduced is if they're physically here on site doing it and we submit this stuff to them. So, until we're able to submit our own IFSAC seals, we will be able to receive them from somebody else.
Correct.
You're good with that?
Yep.
Okay, so I have a motion. I have a second. Any other discussion? Any other questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so moved. So we're moving that on to the commission.
Item number 6, update on firefighter advisory committee vacancies and selection process.
So do you have anything to share? So we're now in this process where they're taking applications. And for anybody that's not in the know, they're looking at expanding our committee from 9 to 11.
Correct.
So we'll have 2 new members on our committee to put us on par with the what will be the health and wellness and the curriculum and testing
Correct.
Committees as well.
Yep.
So there'll be 11 of us. We already have a handful of several vacancies. We have two vacancies as we speak, and Keith is getting ready to vacate. So that'll be our third vacancy.
Correct.
So at the end of today's meeting, there will just be the 5 of us that are sitting here besides Keith. That will be on this committee plus Jim Reed.
Correct.
And I know Jim's position and one of those new vacancies, is up for reappointment. Or re-election. I don't have that spreadsheet in front of me what they came up with for who's on what cycle.
I didn't think that was starting until the 5-year mark or 6-year mark from the time that 463 was adopted, but I may be wrong on that.
I think you're correct.
Yeah, that's right.
So
that's
you wouldn't have anybody up for
re-election
at this point.
Okay. That's not how I understood it, but that may be me. So the applications that are being accepted right now,
So currently the process has been revamped and improved. Currently we are taking, or maybe it ended, I don't remember the date. But currently the applications that we're taking and everything right now has been moved to the FIDO page. So you can submit an application for a committee. You fill it out, it gets submitted, it goes to Chief Lisco and one of our other staff to be able to process it. They look at it, verify all the information that's on there, and then it's put into a folder and then goes to the commissioners. The first one that we were doing, since it's so open right now, is the Health and Wellness Committee. So that was the first one we're doing. And then I can't remember what order. I want to say you guys are next and then C&T, or it may be flipped. It may be C&T, then Health and then the curriculum and testing.
So our process is not accepting applications.
Not yet.
Okay. So the applicants that would be coming onto this committee are to fill the vacancies and or add the 2 new members?
Correct.
Yes, pretty much. Vacancies have a certain term, and once those vacancies are filled,
and eventually that term it'll be term limited. But then there's new terms for which, you know, new applicants get voted on.
So help us understand, so those of us that will remain on this committee, when will our positions be either extended, renewed, or reappointed?
I believe I came out with a legal memo that kind of parsed out, okay, there's a difference between the old terms and then the new terms. And then in there it said when each member's term is ended. And then once it's ended, then there'll be a new person, or maybe the same one. You know, it just means their term is ended.
Okay. Well, I'll try to get a better clarification on it, unless anybody else has more information to share with us in the process. I know there is a massage period, if you would, that we're trying to massage this in. It's not like we're flipping a light switch. Because I know it's been a long road. It's been several years now that we've been wrestling with how we're staffing our committee. And you know, there's nothing prohibiting us from losing more members of this committee. I mean, so right now we're at the concern of the very next meeting is going to be a struggle to have a quorum.
Yes.
I guess they haven't accepted the applications yet for this committee, or is there...
Really, they haven't opened it up yet.
Because I know they had talked about opening up, I guess, a year ago or 2 years ago when we... knew we were going to have vacancies. I don't know if they had already done.
Well, yeah, they were talking about opening it up, but they had to revamp the process. So,
okay.
And then they've also had to work on the gist of the terms and everything like that.
So in regards to filling those vacancies, we don't really know when that will happen, basically.
I'm looking for it. Is it on? Okay.
For the
Firefighter Advisory Committee?
It's not on the webpage yet.
I'll have to get the rights for that.
Okay. We could very easily be a year out before we actually have a vacancy filled up for the...
I think that's a very legitimate time frame. Yes.
Was your memo in the notebook 2 meetings ago?
In the commissioner notebook?
Yes. Yeah, it was 2 meetings ago.
Okay, because I'm trying to see if I have it that I can forward to you guys.
Okay.
That would be...
Yeah, I think that would be helpful.
Awesome.
Do you guys have any comments or questions? So it's always said this is not an actionable item on our agenda. It's just an update, and I don't seem like I'm updating. So,
because I got a question on the wellness committee. They currently have the committee in standing now, right? They already have members within that committee. Are they asking for new members, or has that committee been
abolished? No, it hasn't been abolished. They're asking for new members right now because they don't...
They dropped, like, we're struggling not to end up like they did.
Yeah.
They dropped down to a number where they no longer had a quorum.
Yeah, they no longer qualify on the
same. So those that were currently on it are still on it unless they were told that we're not on it no more. And again, I'm asking because someone asked me...
Nobody was told they were no longer on it. They resigned.
Okay.
But there are members still on it.
Correct.
Okay. Cause
and those
right.
members
there's
are
not
still
many, there's not many.
Okay, because someone were asking me if they had to reapply, and that's why I was trying to answer that question for
them. Well, at some point, they will, but
yeah,
not this term.
Okay.
At some point, they will. So, I will make sure y'all are clear on this. Whenever your position, whenever we get down the road farther, your position will come up as having the term ended, and you all are eligible to be reappointed for another 6 months, but you will, in fact, have to apply. It's not just a given. So if you're interested in still staying in that position, whatever that your place 3 or place 5 or whatever we're calling those, position 1 or position 5 or 8 or whatever it is, when your name comes up, if you're interested in still serving, you will have to make it be known. I don't know if you'll need to fill out the application. It seems like it would be this hasn't been vetted out yet, but it doesn't seem like it would make sense that you have to fill out an application and go through an interview process when you've already been serving and everybody knows who you are. I think it would just be a way of communicating to the commission, yes, you still wish to serve, because you would just easily say, no, I don't wish to be reappointed. Now they know they have a vacancy and they've got to take applications for it. But there'll have to be some formal process where you say, yeah, I wish to be reappointed, or no, I'm actually done, I'm good, replace me.
All right, Mr. Commissioner, I got the things here for For position one, which is Jim Moody, his term started 2024. It expires 2030. Yours started in 2025, or, sorry, 2025, which is all the stuff. It will end in 2031.
So we have to be reappointed in 2025, and Jim doesn't have to be reappointed in 2024.
You have to, yeah, there's going to be a process by which they express, yes, I want to be reappointed, or no, I do not want to be reappointed.
Yeah.
And then the commission, you know, takes that into account. If you don't want to be reappointed, then they look at the other applicants.
So to my point then, it's possible in this first process that they could reappoint somebody different than Jim Reedy, and then next year they could reappoint somebody different than me because my position is up next year.
It's a little confusing because they make a differentiation about sitting members right now, excuse me, and then a new term. It's like, whatever happened in the past when your term's over with, we stop and, you know, have this new process, have a new term, you know, 6-year term from the date of the end of the last term. And it's all new. However, as far as the process by which you want to be reappointed or you desire not to be reappointed, I don't know the exact format of how that happens, but... And there is, I'm sure there's probably a process by which whoever is doing all the applications and everything compiles it and then gives the information to the commission and they make the decision.
Correct. So after today, you guys will have 1, 2, 3 vacancies. Now that's vacancies of current chairs that you have appointed to the advisory board. And then you have 2 brand new members that are going to have to come on board too.
Right.
So you'll have a total of 5 vacant open chairs at the end of the day.
But to Frank's point, but then also position one needs to be visited.
Yes, at the end of their term, I mean it happens, I guess, every year. Terms come to an end and the commission has to address, you know, who fills the next term. It may be a reappointment. It may be a totally different person.
But I'm just trying to figure out, though, for the first time, so like to Jim, I'm sure Jim would ask this question if he was here. If he's on the slate from 2024 to 2030, and I'm on the slate from 2025 to 2031, are positions up for reappointment in 24 and 25? Or are we already good for 24, 25, and this will not be visited until 2030 and 2031?
At the point that your term ends, that appointment, it's like it's done. They make a differentiation between the what they call the holdovers, you know, and then the vacancies and that sort of thing. And my memo goes into a little more detail, so I'm just talking off the top of my head and hope I've got everything correct, but the important date is when the term ends. Once that term ends, you know, they must appoint a new person or reappoint the same.
So we are talking about 2030 and 2031 then.
If you're already set for those terms, and like I said, there was a spreadsheet that showed each member and when they were first appointed and when their term ends. And as you said, some of them were 2030, 2031. Some of them are right now. I mean, we've got vacancies now.
Right, and I don't want to, and I don't know about you all, but this has been my concern, and I think I failed to keep understanding it. But so we already have 3 positions and 2 new positions, and then if we're going to add another one of an existing position, that's more than half the committee is all going to be replaced in 1 year. And I'm sorry, I'm just going to throw this down the road. That means 6 years from now, there's a chance that there's a wholesale drop again of more than half the committee, which was never the intent of anybody's process. That's why they say staggered terms. So, yes, I think that makes it all the more important that existing members of the committee, let's not throw them in there, because no matter how we look at it, we're going to be dealing with half of our committee is going to be brand new here in the very near future. which it may not be a problem, but for right now, it's at least
right.
a concern.
Yeah.
We may be 10 times better than we are now, but it's a concern.
I'm not seeing your memo, but after the meeting, I'll send it out to everybody.
Okay, that'd be great.
We'll get together.
All right. And I think it was just on the agenda here just to update you guys and nothing more. So
it is confusing.
Well, thank you for helping me out on that.
That memo will help because, like I said, there's a differentiation between holdover members and then new members. And it's in the statute and makes it very confusing.
Okay.
And that memo should straighten everything out and give you the dates at which the terms end.
It's lower language. It's very vague.
It's a different language.
Okay. Well, fair enough. All right.
Move along to item number 7, subjects for future agenda items.
All right. Does anybody have any subjects or future agenda items? We talked about a couple of things that we probably almost should throw out there, but...
Would it be appropriate to just, for the time being, with the updates or with what the commission is doing in the background, just to keep the cancer and mental health awareness on the agenda as a discussion item, just to make sure that we're updated every meeting, we know where that process is and what to do with it?
Yeah, I think that's legitimate. What do you think, Cliff?
It's up to you guys. I mean, the future agenda items, if you want to future agenda, put it on there.
I'm going to ask this also, Grace, because I had this note to ask both Cliff and Grace this question. So, with the injury reporting, you know how you show the 4-year or 5-year trend? You know, we've almost been doing this since 2010. If I'm not mistaken. So next year will be our 15th year of trending this out. Would it be unreasonable to ask now, a year ahead of time, besides next year's injury report, and tell me if I'm just creating too much work for anybody, but could we possibly next year just look at a 15-year trend on anything that we have data on instead of just a 5-year trend? Would that be possible? So in other words, I'd almost be asking, besides an annual report, maybe every 5 years we do a comprehensive. And all we'd be doing is taking previous year's reports and just putting them all on the same spreadsheet. But that's easier said than done, so.
Well, I would say yes. I mean, without looking at it specifically, I don't know. Because there might be areas where, you know, there really isn't 15 years because things have changed from year to year. You know, every year we kind of come up with a new idea about something. So it may not be consistent where you can get 15 years, you know, for everything, but I don't see why more years couldn't be added if that's what y'all want to do.
Well, for right now, I think I'd almost be just asking, let's just, if anybody that's a player and it could at least just think about it and discuss it. I have no problem with somebody coming to me and saying, we're just not going to do that next year. I'm fine with that. That's
right.
I think next year's report with 5 years of data is sufficient. I don't have a problem with that.
It doesn't make a difference to me. It's just I don't know how consistent I would be able to be, like if it would be okay if one has 11 years worth and one has 7 years worth. And you know what I mean? Just depending on what's there. I don't know until I actually do it.
Okay. Well, it's just a thought and an idea, and then also a thought and an idea, and I know Chief Wisco will definitely have an opinion on everything we're talking about, but...
he's texting me.
I can't imagine he's not. He's probably telling you to turn off the ears microphone. What would be the insane idea of inviting the Texas workforce to attend one of our meetings when we're discussing the injury report? So when they hear about our concerns about mental health or cancer or trending or injuries, or burns to the fingers, or what type of gear, and they realize how complex of a problem we're trying to address, maybe they could offer up some help and some suggestions, and maybe they realize that they're a player in this and can help us.
There's nothing, but they're open meetings. We can send out a blanket invitation to them if we can figure out who to talk to over there. But yeah, if we invite them, we put out the open invite. Unfortunately, if they show up, they show up. If they don't, they don't. So.
Well, how about if we invited them to come and give us a presentation so we understood how the Texas workforce worked?
You can do that, too, but that would be your
is that ridiculous?
It's not ridiculous, but I think that So looking at 419 and the way that it's worded, we're actually working with the fire marshal's office, but it states in there the insurance commissioner, which fire marshal's office, we all know, is under
TDI.
So I really think that we need to start digging with the fire marshal's office first and see where they're receiving their data from that we're also reporting to them, so that way it says that we should be able to share, that they're to share their data with us, so why don't we start with the fire marshal's office first and figure out where we need to go from there, because we keep talking about workman's comp. I mean, the state's workman's comp is through SORM, which is the State Office of Risk Management. Each entity, you know, that we're talking about, municipality, you know, I don't know if they're doing their workman's comp through the same, you know, vendors, I guess, for better, lack of a better word. So, you know, we keep talking about CWC. You know, let's start with the fire marshal's office and dig from there.
Well, I'm not asking for this to be an agenda.
I just want a discussion. Absolutely. And maybe
we got plenty of time.
Maybe we throw a subject, you know, for the next, you know, just what we found out for discussion, you know, if you want to throw that on the next agenda for.
Well, it's almost, to me, sounds like a health and wellness committee opportunity to try to marry up the right people to get us all working on the same page.
Well, I will tell you, the boat's already sailed. What Amanda is talking about, communicating with the State Fire Marshal's office. I emailed Chief Knight, Chief Allen, and Chuck already responded that he is going to check with his Texas person on Monday because they're out till Monday, so I will have some, not definite answers, but at least we got to maybe have a road we can go down to talk to them about it.
Okay.
Because then in 419, it even states that they're supposed to share information to us, or between us and the State Fire Marshal's office, through their texters. And they're supposed to be getting reports from the Texas Workforce Commission about the injuries in the state of Texas for firefighters. Whether they're getting that or not, I have no idea. That's one of the...
Yeah, that word supposed is a gray area.
Yeah. So, it's vague.
Yeah.
So when Chuck, Chief Allen, or Chief Knight answered me after that time, I'll let you guys know. So.
If I may as well, I know you just said maybe this is something for health and wellness. They're not... You know, this is something that's been charged with you guys for this particular meeting, you know, from the commission, so I don't think that it would be inappropriate if y'all wanted to continue the conversation at a different time, just for an update.
Okay. Do y'all think it's worth putting on future meeting agendas, or are we good for right now?
I'm not opposed to having this conversation, make sure we keep this squeaky wheel going, get some information on it. And then if we come up with stuff, then we can also share with the Health and Safety Committee as well what's going on and kind of move through, because they may be asking the same question and they just need the right avenue to go down. And this has been something, like you've said, for almost 15 years, it's been tasked with oversight by us to ask those questions, and so maybe willing to share that so they have something to roll with.
So you want to put that on the future meeting agenda? By then we'd have Chief Wisco's comments and suggestions and ideas. Plus we also have the ball rolling right now on the Health and Wellness Committee. I don't know when, but maybe there's a chance they have, you know, appointed folks by then. It might be beneficial that they attend one of our meetings so that we can start to all communicate on the same page. I'm just throwing that out there. So let's throw it on our agenda then. We can always delete it, right, between now and then?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
So all right, just injury report in general discussion still, or do you want to be more specific?
Injury report reporting ideas and collaboration, some big fancy word like that. Is that good? Anything else? All right.
Item number 8, future meeting dates.
What do you show as our next meeting date? Amanda, I don't have my calendar right here in front of me.
So y'all don't have anything else scheduled for this year? This was the last one that was scheduled in advance. I did have, and I can get it real fast, I have the commission's next meeting. So August 15th is the actual commission meeting. They have a workshop on the 14th, and then it's November 21st is the one.
So we typically in the past met in September and December. So August 14th, 15th is the commission meeting?
Correct.
So
I mean, there's not, I think that it was mentioned at one time that maybe y'all could, and maybe this was, maybe I'm confusing it with the commission meeting itself. So I apologize if I am. But I mean, if September wasn't one that was, I mean, if y'all met in October, that would still be prior to the November 20th.
So do you think October is better than September?
As for us, we're fine. I don't know. That would be more of a mic or Cliff. I mean, this room is open, you know, as long as there's not another committee meeting in here. And the only other committees that I know of that are scheduled at this point would be the commission meetings. So.
And I will be on vacation October 13th through the 30th.
No, you won't. and just so you got, and I'll get Amanda to touch base with Sammy. There is going to be a meeting in here. I can't remember when it is. I think it's November. T-Series is going to be using this in November for one of their board meetings. So but we'll get a specific date to that one.
Does the curriculum and testing committee have a date for their next meeting?
Yes, we have two meetings tentatively scheduled right now. One in beginning of August, and then one more in September 25th and 26th.
So could we tentatively put a September 26th date on the calendar? Would that work for y'all? Let's throw that as a tentative date in there. And do you want to look at December at all, just so we can tentatively, because at least we know what's really nice about this new move up here into North Lamar is the fact that we have the rooms where we're not having the thumb wrestle like we used to with certain dates. What was the second meeting for the, you said September and in August, that's the only two?
August 1st and 2nd, and then September 25th and 26th.
And they haven't scheduled anything beyond that?
No, just the two.
Okay. I know historically we have met in early December, but I know over the last few years we typically have canceled because we really didn't have an agenda item.
True.
But how about if we just throw a tentative date out there? So
you can throw a tentative date out there. We can always cancel.
Usually we've never gone beyond the first or second week because that's, you know, the holiday season. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I know we typically meet on Thursdays, but if y'all ever decide you want to meet on a different day, we're pretty flexible with that as well. Do you want to throw either the 5th or the 12th, either of those days as a tentative?
I'm good with the 5th.
The 5th? Is everybody else okay tentatively just putting that date on the calendar? Okay, let's do that as a tentative date.
A.m. meetings.
What's that?
10 a.m.
Yeah, we'll do 10 a.m.
It gives the chairman time to sleep in because he'll be coming from somewhere.
Okay, his house.
Item number 9, recognition of committee member Keith Schmidt for his service.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make a statement. I would like to thank Chief Schmidt for his years of service for the Texas Commission on Fire Protection and the Texas Fire Service in general. I have his letter here stating that it's in you guys' agenda, but I didn't tell him this earlier. I'm not accepting it, so I'm telling him that. So, but again, Chief Schmidt, I appreciate everything you do. Chief Sheriff Schmidt, I appreciate everything you've done, and we look forward, if you ever need anything from any of us, I will give you Chief D's phone number.
Well, I'll echo those sentiments as well. It's been great having you on here. It's hard to believe it's been that quick from 2016 to 2024. That's 8 years. And your calming voice and rationale thought process has always been, I almost view you as an older brother or the calming father figure, but I'm older than you, so I can't really say that. So, but you,
similar in age.
You're similar in age. But anyways, it's not just that a heartfelt thank you from myself, but you know, all of us sitting here represent the Texas Fire Service. So it's the men and women who respond to that 911 phone call and all the things that go into that, everything from their safety and their security and the things we've been talking about here today. And on behalf of the Texas Fire Service, you've made an impact. And we love you. We hope for the best for you and your family. We know you now carry that sheriff's hat and gun and badge that looks a little different than the fire department. But
I wore my red holsters. The guys, the sheriff's office still give me a hard time for being a fireman. But so they bought me red holsters. So, yeah, I don't know that you'll ever get the fireman out of me, for sure.
No. And having just recently thumb wrestled for a long time on how to retire, and I'm not sure if I got it right or not, but I read an article somewhere where somebody told me that you don't retire as a firefighter. You become an inactive firefighter. It's as simple as that. We never stop being a firefighter. So we know, even though it's Sheriff Schmidt now, you're still a firefighter and always will be. So.
Well, thank you very much. Like I said, I've truly enjoyed the years. And yeah, every time I listen or watch a fire truck go by, it's still near and dear to my heart, for sure. For sure.
Well, we have a plaque made for you on behalf of the commission, both the staff and the Firefighter Advisory Committee. So we're going to wish you the best of luck. We'd like to get a picture. Should we adjourn the meeting first and then take
photographs? And then we'll do the whole.
It seems like we're
social media
just doing something silly. And then, but nonetheless, for the minutes and the folks that are listening, we're saying goodbye to Keith. But we know he's still going to be nearby. You're always welcome to come by, visit with us. You're always welcome to attend the meetings. But we definitely want you to stay in touch with us. If not, we'll stay in touch with you. So.
Okay.
Once again,
I just no longer can speed through Gonzales County.
we know a guy if we do. We'll drop a name.
Get a free get out of jail card for sure.
So thank you once
thank
again.
You.
Heartfelt thank you.
Thank you.
Probably your last act. You
all
got
right.
One more thing.
Item number 10. Adjourn the meeting.
I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Daniel Buford's motioning to adjourn the meeting.
And I'll second the motion.
Okay, Antonio is second it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Thank you for those of you that have been in attendance. Y'all have a safe trip home. If y'all ever need anything, don't hesitate to reach out to any of us up here on this committee. We're